started. The clock on the wall is a little bit slow. It is after 5 o'clock. We'd like to welcome you out tonight to the Southern Region RAC meeting. My name is Dave Black. I'm the chairman. I'm from St. George. I represent the public at large. So far, I've seen... Oh, Donnie's here. We have two of our board members here, Donnie Hunter and Steve. Raise your hands. Welcome. It's always good to see you. I'd also like to introduce the RAC members, and I'll have them start. They can introduce themselves down on my left with Mac.
Mac Morrell from Bicknell Agriculture.
Craig Lobb from Iron County Agriculture.
Gene Boardman Hinckley at large.
Braden Richmond, Beaver with Sportsman.
Nick Jorgensen, Washington County, non-consumptive.
Kevin Bunnell, I'm the regional supervisor for the Division of Wildlife out here in Cedar City.
Dale Bagley, I represent an elected official from Marysville.
Rusty Aiken at large.
Wade Heaton at large.
Lane Torgerson from Richfield. I'm a sportsman's representative.
Sean Kelly, Fillmore, Forest Service.
Brian Johnson from Enoch, non-consumptive.
Thank you. Our first action item tonight will be to accept the meeting minutes and the agenda, and I'll entertain a motion to do so. Dale?
I make a motion to accept the minutes and the agenda for tonight.
Do we have a second?
Second it.
Second from Braden. Any discussion on the motion? All in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries unanimous. Next agenda item is an informational item. That will be from Kevin Bunnell. It will be a Wildlife Board update.
I wasn't there.
And I wasn't either.
There's a fisherman here.
Yeah. I wasn't actually at the board meeting. I was attending another meeting, and Donnie and Steve, help me if we get anything wrong here, but I don't think there was anything. It was mostly to do with fishing regulations, and it went rather smoothly, if I understand right. So nothing significant to report from the board meeting.
Okay. We'll also follow up with Kevin with the regional update.
I'll try to be brief because we've got a large agenda. In our wildlife section, the deer hunt went very well this year. We had good weather. We've seen talked to a lot of people that are seeing more deer than they have in the past. And if you're connected to anybody that or groups of people that hunts, you've all had a lot of pictures of big animals that have been being texted back and forth, and it seems to have been a good year. My opinion is that we're in the good old days of deer hunting in Utah right now, and we're going to do what we can to maintain that as long as Mother Nature cooperates with us, but obviously weather has a big part of that. We're in the middle right now of doing our pheasant releases and having our youth hunts. We release pheasants at several places around the region, usually on Thursday or Friday prior to the weekend hunt. And there's a list of those places where they're being released on the website. We've had several youth pheasant hunts around the region that have been very successful. I took my own boys out last Saturday out to the Pavant. Yeah, go ahead.
It was so much fun. I took my kids to the Beaver one 2 weeks ago, and I took my kids and some nephews and some other people to the to the Pavant one, and the habitat there, the work the division's done is incredible. They had great cover. Those birds weren't running. It was, I mean, they were running a little bit, but it was great cover. It was just so much fun to see every kid there just grinning from ear to ear because they all shot their shotguns. They all got the crap scared out of them stepping on pheasants. It was just so much fun. I watched a 9-year-old little girl ground pound two roosters, and she was just ecstatic about it. It was awesome. So I want to just thank the division and SFW because it was so much fun to watch those kids pull the trigger and get to see wild birds. And you'd hear bang, 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 and then you just see that bird just keep on going. You're like, sweet, let's go chase him. And you just go chase, and it would fly, and it was awesome. So thank you, guys. It was good.
Yeah, they were a lot of fun. On a personal note, my own son, my older boy, you know, hasn't been really caught the bug on hunting, and after Saturday, I think I've got him closer than I ever have. So, if you know a young person that you want to get excited about hunting, you know, those youth hunts, there's not a better opportunity to do that than on a youth pheasant hunt. So take advantage of that. There's lots of captures coming up in our wildlife section. They'll be doing some deer, elk, pronghorn, and bighorn sheep all over the next 4 or 5 months. That'll be going on at various places across the region. And the biologists are in the middle of just starting their deer classifications right now. That's probably the most important data that we collect relative to big game in the year because that's where we get our buck to doe ratios, and then that obviously helps determine permit numbers and everything. So they put a lot of time and effort into that. Within our wildlife section, they're taking advantage of the good weather right now and trying to sprint to the finish on all the habitat projects. Got close to 30,000 acres of habitat projects that are about 25,000 acres of proactive work and about 5,000 acres of fire rehab that's going on. But as soon as we get all that seed in the ground, I think all of us need to pray for rain and snow because as enjoyable as this fall has been, we got to have some water for next year. The other thing that's noteworthy, the number of deer that's been getting hit on the road, and we track that pretty closely, is up this year. That's good and bad. It's up because our deer numbers are up. It's bad, obviously, because it's causing damage to people's vehicles and deer dying in the process. Gary's crew is out, you know, trying to find if we have holes in fences and things like that, and trying to get that stuff repaired and fix the problems where we can. But those numbers are up. And we'll have seasonal road closures will be beginning on our wildlife management areas on January 1st. From our law enforcement section, obviously this is the biggest time or the busiest time of year for them. Just give you a few numbers. Within this calendar year, starting last January, within the southern region, our law enforcement have investigated. So there's lots of others out there that obviously they probably don't know about, but they've investigated 313 illegal kills. Of those, 53 are deer, 24 are elk, and the bulk of them are fishing violations, 142 fishing violations, but still, those are pretty large numbers, and the vast majority of those come from tips from the public, from other hunters being the eyes and ears and reporting when they see something that doesn't look right, and that's where a lot of the success comes in the law enforcement world. Brian or Zed, either you want to add anything to that? Okay. You know, on that note, there is currently, we are offering a reward. It's a joint. We put a reward out there, and SFW matched it to try to get information on a trophy buck that was killed on the Monroe unit. You can find information on that online, and we'd really like to figure out what happened with that one. Within the aquatic section, the Fish Lake Perch Tournament that's been going on for the last couple of years and growing every year is scheduled again for this year. I don't remember the dates, Phil. Do you have those off the top of your head? I don't either. We can find that. But there, we are looking for some dedicated hunters to help with that. If you know anybody that needs dedicated hunter hours, we've got a big walleye tournament going on down at Lake Powell. That'll be going on for the next several months. We've had some really good prizes donated for that. So if you enjoy Lake Powell, now's the time to be fishing at Lake Powell. We've stocked some big brown trout here on the pond just here on Lay Hill that the locals here in Cedar City have been taking advantage of, and there'll be some other some more large brood fish going into the community ponds down in St. George over the next couple of weeks. That always creates quite a buzz when people are catching 5 and 6 pound trout out of these little community ponds. And again, Richard is asking everybody to do rain dances or do whatever you can to make sure that there's water for fish for next spring. In our admin section, we're finally back to full staff. If you remember our last update, we were kind of running on a skeleton crew, but we've got Stephanie back from surgery and doing well, and we've hired, and now my mind just went blank, Mindy. I hate it when I do that. And everybody's doing very well. And just if you haven't put in your permit application for the sportsman's permit, permits, those close tomorrow. And the drawing, the results will be posted November 23rd. So that's one that's a pretty quick turnaround. Best tag in the state if you can get it. From our outreach section, they put a big effort every year into the Hunters Helping Condors program with our non-lead program on the Zion unit. That continues to grow, and we continue to get a higher percentage of people participating in that every year. They've been getting a lot of photos submitted through our Facebook page of all the animals that have been killed this year. And if you want to do that, you can share those directly via direct message on the Southern Region Facebook page. And then Phil and his crew are currently going out and capturing a lot of video of rutting mule deer, and we'll be putting together some videos that they'll share over social media, probably starting next week and then continuing on for a couple of weeks. So watch for those. That's all I've got, Dave, but I'm happy to answer any questions.
Have you got any preliminary data on harvest success rates on the muzzleloader hunts since we've allowed magnified scopes?
No, it'll be a while. Justin, when will we start having data come in on that? Turn your mic on.
Oh, it's childproof. There we go. January, February is when we'd have that summarized.
Anecdotally, are you hearing anything?
Yeah, anecdotally, success rates really high on archery, muzzleloader, and any weapon. I think last year we had some of our highest success rates that we've seen on these general season units. We harvested as many deer last year as we did since 2000, and we did it with a lot fewer permits, and so those success rates were quite a bit higher. It's hard to know, but my guess is we're pretty similar to last year. So.
Okay. Any other questions? It's nice to have a full house. I don't think we're missing anybody tonight. Mike. Oh, yeah, we don't have, and he's the guy that lives the closest. Mike lives right here in Cedar. Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Kevin. Before we move on to our next action item, I just wanted to echo both Kevin and Brian on the youth pheasant hunt. My daughter participated this year in New Harmony with Jason Nichols' kids. Maybe next year we'll do a better job getting the word out. We only had 4 youth at that session that we went to, but it was awesome. That's the first time my daughter had killed a bird with a shotgun, and the first bird that came up, she was able to get it with one shot, and we just had a great time, and I appreciate the work and the effort that was put in there, and I hope that they continue to do that in the future. Item number 5 is the elk unit management plan revisions. Before we get started, I think most of you guys are familiar with the process, but just to go over it briefly, if you have a comment tonight, you need to fill out a comment card. The yellow cards are some in the back. Make sure those are delivered up front. As we go through, we'll have the presentation first. We'll have an opportunity after that for the RAC members to ask questions, and then if there's any questions from the public, they can be asked at that time. We'll probably have the public come to the microphone on your left. And then if you ask a question, we probably ask that you just limit any follow-up questions to one after your main question. With the comments tonight, we will give organizations 5 minutes to present their comment. Any follow-up speakers from that same organization or individuals, we'd allow 3 minutes for their comment. Since we do have a large agenda item, we will follow the time tonight. And then we'll have comments from the RAC, and then we'll have motions and voting after that. So with that, we'll start with agenda item number 5 with Justin Shannon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Justin Shannon, and tonight I'm going to present the elk unit management plans. So to begin, the statewide elk management plan was approved by the Wildlife Board this last December, and these unit plans that will be presented tonight, these were revised this past summer, and local advisory committees were formed on units that were either chronically over objective, a change in the population objective was being considered, or areas that just simply had high amounts of social conflict. And these advisory committees, they were diverse, and they had representation from sportsmen, landowners, livestock producers, federal agencies, and others. These unit plans, they fall under the umbrella of the statewide management plan goals, which are to improve management of Utah's elk populations, conserve and improve elk habitat throughout the state, and to enhance recreation opportunities for hunting and viewing of elk. And these unit plans, they must stay within the sideboards that are outlined within the statewide elk management plan, and they're being presented as 7-year plans. The purpose of unit plans are to define management goals, objectives, and strategies, to outline unit boundaries, and then to address issues and concerns of elk and their habitats. We'll start with population objectives. The statewide population objective is the sum of objectives contained in unit plans. And so in the statewide plan, we didn't say this is going to be the statewide objective. We felt pretty strongly in a lot of discussion in those plans that a lot of these decisions on how many elk we should have on these units are best made at the local level. And so we just said the statewide objective would be a summation of all the unit plans. Factors that influence these population objectives, they include things like depredation, winter range, social and biological components, range improvements, range health, those types of things. So we'll break this up by regions and kind of go through the various population objective changes by region. So in the northern region, we're recommending increases on the Ogden, Morgan, South Rich, and the East Canyon and Chalk Creek units. So on the Ogden there, we're recommending an increase in elk from 800 to 2,000. Morgan, South Rich, an increase of 300 from 3,500 to 3,800. East Canyon, increase of 800 from 1,000 to 1,800. And then Chalk Creek, another increase of 800. And these graphs here, what we have on the x-axis is a year, so it's essentially what these elk herds have been doing over the last 10 years. And on the y-axis, the number of elk that we've had, with the objectives kind of in dotted lines there across the graph. And so on the Chalk Creek and Ogden units, both of these doing well. Chalk Creek, will take that one first. Pretty good increase about 2009, 2010, we did that survey. We got aggressive with antlerless elk control permits and some different strategies and decreased that and leveled it off. And again, similar thing in Ogden in 2012. We saw that big jump, got really aggressive with those permits, and still trending up a little bit on that one, but with some more intense pressure and harvest, we can get that thing stabilized or decreased to where it needs to be. Northern region continued there in east, in the green, the bottom line is East Canyon. Declining trend for quite a while there. Pretty good increase in 2010-11, but again, with aggressive harvest, we've stabilized that, and now declining once again, closer to the objective. And then Morgan Southridge, again, the blue up top, pretty good increase there in about 2010. Changed some hunt strategies, and now we're down there to objective once more. Northeast region, recommend increases on the North Slope Three Corners unit, the Wasatch Mountains Current Creek unit, and the Aviniquin unit. Now, if you look at these populations, North Slope Three Corners is there in blue, stabilizing to declining trend over the last 10 years. Wasatch Mountains Aviniquin, slightly over objective but stable, not too far off there. And then the Wasatch Mountains Current Creek, that's an area that we did that survey and counted a lot of elk and really got aggressive with our permits and our harvest strategies. And decrease that over 1,500 elk in that three-year time frame. And a lot of discussion as to, I'm sure you heard about issues on the Wasatch in the past, and it's always a point of controversy, but this is why, because we were simply trying to make progress towards our objectives, and we were, and that, a lot of concern, a lot of discussion. Southeast region, recommending an increase of 200 elk on the 9 Mile Range Creek unit from 1,600 to 1,800. Again, this is a unit that over the last 10 years has had a declining trend. We were over objective early, 10 years ago, got some things figured out with some hunt strategies, and we've seen a decline ever since. Central Mountains, Central Region, recommending an increase of 800 elk on the Wasatch Mountains West and 750 elk on the Oker Stansberry units. If you look at these two units, Wasatch Mountains West, they're in blue. Over the last 7 years or so, we've been stable but above the objective. And then on the Oker Stansberries, pretty much at objective that over the 10 years that we've been managing that population. And Southern Region, we're not recommending any population increases in elk tonight. The one thing that does stand out is for the Monroe, Mount Dutton, and the Plateau subunits. Because we radio-collared elk and we know that they move in between units, we decided to try something different and manage for a range of elk. And so overall, with that whole unit, we'll still manage for 10,400 elk, but we'll give ourselves some ability to compensate for when elk move on and off a unit, so we don't have to constantly be overreacting or underreacting based on the movements of these animals. Moving on to habitat management, we're really interested in conducting range trend studies, habitat assessments. We want to know what shape our habitats are in, and that's a priority for us. Protection and maintenance, minimize impacts to our winter and summer ranges, mitigate for habitat losses, and support our federal agencies in managing horse populations to approve objectives. Seemed like in a lot of these committees throughout the state, this discussion item came up quite a bit, and so we threw that in there as well. Improvements, we want to cooperate with various partners on habitat projects. We want to continue the momentum that we've had through the Watershed Restoration Initiative, where we've improved over 1.2 million acres since 2005 at the tune of about $150 million. We have a lot of momentum on habitat restoration right now, and it's getting bigger. I think last year we spent over $25 million in habitat restoration in 1 year. That's pretty impressive when you look at what that's doing for our watersheds. And it's not just helping elk. I mean, it's helping deer. It's helping livestock. It's a priority for us to do good things for habitat. And we want to continue to improve our ranges. So, some of the highlights of the unit plans, some common threads that we saw. There was a tone and there was language that had this in many of them, to work with private landowners, livestock producers, land management agencies, tribe sportsmen, and others to foster good relationships and manage for healthy elk habitat. We want to continue with conducting our aerial trend surveys, modeling populations, and using a variety of antlerless elk harvest strategies to manage the population objectives. With the new elk plan that the Wildlife Board approved last year, we have a lot more tools than we had in the previous plan, and that's something we're excited about, so that we can do these things. We can work on our relationships with landowners and others that aren't a big fan of elk, and also have some of these antlerless harvest strategies to get harvest where we need to and make progress towards our objectives. Let's see, we also want to use antlerless harvest and other management strategies to minimize crop depredation. It's a big priority for us. And then monitor drought conditions and increase antlerless elk permits if needed. If you'll recall in the statewide plan, we now have a provision where if we have drought years, in August we can go back to our wildlife board and request additional elk permits, similar to what we did in 2012 when we had a pretty dry year there. But now it's part of the plan and it's part of our process, which we're excited about. Highlights of the unit plans in the northern region. Want to continue to co-manage elk on the Pilot Mountains with Nevada. That's been working well. And conduct a GPS collar study on the cache and assess feeding strategies at Hardware Ranch. In the northeast region, want to work with the Ute tribe to increase harvest, especially in areas of high depredation or in units that are over objective. A lot of these elk are harbored on tribal land and they spill over onto public land, and we want to continue to make progress towards solving some of those challenges. And then finally, continue to collect movement data of radio collared elk on many parts of that region. Southeast region, continue to monitor elk and CWD positive units and enhance habitat on summer range limited units. They have several of them in the southeast region there. Central region, communicate with the Goshute tribe on elk management related issues. Use private lands only tags to better distribute elk on the Wasatch unit. And use translocation as a management strategy to distribute elk and make progress towards population objective on the Oak Ridge Stansberries. And these release sites would include Muskrat Canyon and Mack Canyon. The southern region, recommending to manage the Monroe, Mount Dunton, and the Fish Lake, Thousand Lakes, and Boulder Caparowitz into one unit management plan. So those don't have four plans anymore. As you read through the rack packet, that's all condensed into one plan, that complex. And because these elk regularly move between the units, managed for a population range. Also increase communication with stakeholders, a common thread in many of the southern region elk plans. And on the Southwest Desert unit, if three of the five goals are met in this plan, that elk committee would reconvene and evaluate and discuss a potential population increase for the Southwest Desert. And that's all I have for the elk unit plans. And Mr. Chair, we're fortunate. If we have questions on statewide planning processes, those bigger picture things, happy to take them. But tonight we've had wildlife managers from several of the regions come down, particularly where population increases are being proposed or other items. So if we have specific questions on units, I have some help, which is appreciated. So.
Okay, great. Okay. Do we have any questions from the RAC? Lane.
Justin, so what with these proposed increases on some, especially some of the units in the north, what does that do to the overall statewide objective? I know we were talking about, if I remember right, the number was 80,000 when we were working on the management plan.
The last plan had an objective of 80,000 in it, and if you remember, we took that out of the statewide elk plan, so we don't have a specific number or an arbitrary number that regions are simply trying to get to. With the increases, if the RACs and the Wildlife Board were to approve all this tonight, it'd be an increase of about 7,250 elk statewide, which puts our objective just over 78,000. Is that kind of what you were getting at? Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Braden?
Just a question. You commented, and it's in there, that there's a diverse group at these plans. Mm-hmm. And I participated in two. I participated in the Beaver plan and then also a meeting over in Ridgefield. I don't know what we called that meeting. But in both of those, I guess I'm just curious what diverse means and who's invited, because in both of those, by far, the majority there were cattlemen. Mm-hmm. And although cattlemen are part of it, it didn't seem very diverse.
You know, what we tried to do is make sure that sportsmen were represented, cattlemen, federal agencies, all that type of thing. If you have I don't know the specific management plan or the committee, it might be more of a local question.
And there were groups from everybody there, but, you know, in each of those, there were two sportsmen and, I want to say between 10 and 15 cattlemen.
Did they all have a... Who can speak to that? Is Teresa here? Vance, you want to come up? This is why I'm glad I brought backup. I didn't attend all these unit plans. Thanks, Vance.
Yeah, so at the meeting in Richfield there, so we had our official committee members that were invited to represent their different groups, and then we just had some people that just came that were not part of the official representatives. They just came, and that was probably where the cattlemen had a good representative there. Group of people, so that's why there was those extra people there. They weren't technically voting members, but they were just there.
They were awfully vocal.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Mac.
Yeah, I was direct the meeting on that. The question I have is when we met, you know.
Okay, there we go. When we met last March on the elk numbers, we had Bill Christensen here from the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation. And he kind of gave a mandate to DWR regarding the predation that we were having on Niagara culture. I want to know what's your strategy there.
So your question is, what do we do at depredating elk?
No. What did you remember what Bill Christensen said?
Vaguely. He said something to the effect that we need to work together, sportsmen.
Well, what he said, if the elk are in your fields, then kill them.
Yeah.
That's his exact words. And my question is, the DWR, where do we stand on that? How do we take care of that?
Sir.
Because agriculture is continually, especially in the southern region, shouldering a big load in the wintertime.
Sure. Yeah. At the 30,000-foot view, we've said this many times, we don't want to grow elk and deer on the backs of private landowners that don't want them. And so if that involves killing them, we're certainly open to that. These elk, if you look at the units and the objectives, if you can kill elk in the bad areas, the areas that are causing problems, the areas that we're losing public support for elk and deer, and we can harvest those animals, that means we can grow them on other parts of the unit where they're more socially acceptable. So that's the answer.
So you're willing to take them off, is that it?
No, we're willing to issue depredation permits.
Well, all it really does, I think we're just treading water at best.
Yeah.
Because the cow elk are training their calves to do the same thing they're doing.
But if we need to get more aggressive in some of these areas, let's have
that
conversation.
Well, if you go by what Bill Christensen said, you ought to be more aggressive.
Yeah.
I mean, he gave a mandate, you know. He says, elk's not going to leave, but if they're in your fields, let's get rid of them.
Sure. Well, and Mac, we are. I mean, we have some areas that we've been aggressive with elk this summer, that we've been aggressive with elk these fall. I mean, I've got Kobe Jones here. He's the coordinator that oversees the depredation program, and he could probably cite a lot of examples of where we've approved a lot of cow elk permits and really given these things out to help landowners.
I think that ought to be a part of the elk plan, what he said.
Yeah.
You know, rather than what you got in the elk plan, is that we're going to give you a few tags just to keep you satisfied with what's happening on in your fields.
Yeah.
You know, that isn't working much, so.
Well, if we need to do better, let's do better. But it is in the plans. I mean, right there, that third bullet down. That's why we have these depredation permits, is to make progress and harvest some elk and reduce elk in these areas that landowners don't want them. I'm not sure what we gain by ignoring depredation requests and not taking action. We lose public support for these elk. We frustrate landowners. We pay damage claims. And so it's in our best interest, your best interest, sportsman's best interest, to remove animals in these areas that
you know, and I agree. Yeah. You're right.
Sure.
Okay.
Have any other questions from the rack? Okay.
Justin, under your little display for habitat management, you talk about supporting federal agencies, managing horse population objectives. Is the trend to reduce the number? Is that what it is you're supporting?
I just think any support that we can give them, whether it's politically, socially, biologically, whatever we need to do to be in their camp when they're proposing decreases in horse populations. That's okay. What we're after. Yeah.
Okay, and then what are you doing in terms of assessing the feeding practices at the Hardware Ranch? Is it reduce the amount that, or what is it you're doing there?
Yeah, let's have Darren speak to that. Darren's the assistant wildlife manager on the cache, and
okay,
he can talk
thanks.
About the talk of why that was such an issue on the cache plan.
Thanks, Darren DeBlois, Northern Region. We've actually had a couple committees on Hardware. Our concern at Hardware is brucellosis. Those elk are right across the border from Wyoming and Idaho, where we have pretty big migration routes. Wyoming's done a lot of GPS work with migration. And so we're a little bit concerned. So it's going to be, what we're going to do is GPS collar some elk at Hardware, get a better feel for where they're going. We do have bulls that show up in Soda Springs, Idaho, out into Kemmer, out, you know, they go a long ways. And so we're concerned about bringing brucellosis back in the state. So the strategy is to maintain what we're doing at Hardware now, status quo, for a couple of years, and then start playing around with the feeding regime and see if we can maybe get those elk to winter there without having to be fed every year.
Okay.
And in heavy winters where we have concerns about elk in the valley or possible starvation, we'd look at feeding in those years. So that's it in a nutshell.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. We'd like to welcome Harry and Mike also coming in late. Appreciate you here. Any other questions from the... Go ahead.
I just wondered, it doesn't involve the southern region that much, but some of those units in the north took a pretty substantial raise. Was in the elk committees, were they pretty well everybody on board with increasing some of those areas that much?
Yeah, they were. A lot of those units up north are dominated by private lands, and we had many private landowners come and ask for additional elk in those areas.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay. Gene.
On these private land people that are asking for additional elk, and on the ones that are want more elk killed and don't want them on their land, I'm always wondering, are their lands open to hunting?
It probably depends the landowner. You certainly have landowners that the answer is no. And when you say, is there land open to hunting, it's not just that anyone in the public can come and access it. There's a lot of landowners that are pretty particular about that. But there's others that are more open to it. A lot of these landowners let friends and families and others come on and get that access. And I know that can be frustrating to sportsmen at times, because they say, this doesn't directly benefit me as a sportsman. I don't have access to these properties. But the purpose of those private lands permits, and we've got some good feedback on it already, is if you can apply that hunting pressure there, and if you can get the harvest on those private lands, then it distributes the elk off of those private lands, and you get that harvest so you can grow them elsewhere on the unit, like we've talked about. And then that indirectly helps public hunters, because there's more elk on these public land units where they're trying to apply and put in for. So hope that helps. But no, I mean, not every landowner opens their land up to hunting.
Yeah. Anybody else on the rack? Do we have any questions from the public? Okay. And look at our comment cards. Okay, we have two comment cards. The first is John Keeler, followed by Bryce Peeling.
John Keeler with the Utah Farm Bureau. Farm Bureau was represented at these unit management plan committee meetings. There were four in my region. I went to three of them, but had some other individuals that represented me at the one in Panguitch. Well, actually, it was in Cedar, but it was for Panguitch Lake. These are some of the items that we brought up at these meetings and are presenting them for your consideration. We feel that these points, if implemented, will help the success of these elk unit plans. Number one, any proposed increase in elk unit objective numbers should only be considered if there is a significant increase in the acres of land within unit that has been treated for elk habitat, and those acres are producing enough forage to sustain the increase in elk. The forage component is critical. It's got to be there in order to sustain these animals. That's true for livestock as well as wildlife, but that production needs to be there. If the elk unit population numbers are over objective currently, then they must be brought back to objective before any increases are allowed based on the previous point. In some of these areas that are over, chronically over objective numbers, those numbers have got to be brought back into objective in order for it to be successful. I know particularly in the Southwest Desert, that meeting there, with the horse numbers the way they are and the problem that exists there, and I know that the plan calls for working with federal agencies on this, but there's no hardly any workability that's going on there. Those numbers are continuing to increase. Congress doesn't seem to be willing to take action on it. I know they do gather some in some areas, but they're increasing. So we really do need to watch those numbers there, elk numbers, and they've got to be brought back into objective. All land treatments must be monitored to demonstrate the vegetative production will support the proposed increase, and I think that's called for in the plan, so we need to be vigilant on that. Land treatments must be made to the critical range that is needed for the elk winter or summer range. Be sure that it's done in what is needed for the elk. Special hunts need to be conducted to control problem elk or elk that are over objective or in areas that have special resource issues, agriculture depredation, aspen treatments, etc. And that is called for in the plan. DWR needs to put collars on more elk to monitor where the problem areas are and where problem elk are, and most of the plans are calling for those. More water developments need to be installed to disperse animals for both wildlife and livestock. And if increases in elk numbers can be justified based on the health and availability of the forage resources, then increases in livestock should be considered and implemented as well. This is one of the items that this PLIPCO group is working on, that we, if the range can sustain increases in elk, then they can sustain more AUMs with livestock, and we want to be sure that that happens. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bryce Pilling, Sportsman for Fish and Wildlife, and we support the plan that the division has put out as presented. We'd also like to thank the division for all their hard work that they've done over the years and continue to do so. Thank you.
Okay, we also have some additional comment cards for item number five. We have Ben Louder, followed by Mike Twitchell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ben Louder, representing the Utah Bowman's Association. Had the opportunity to sit on the Statewide Elk Committee as well as the Wasatch Unit Elk Committee. Very excited about some of the new tools that we have coming from those plans, and as we've seen them start to get implemented this year. Excited to see the new plans that have been presented here tonight and the increases in the objectives on those various units, and we support those 100%. Also, I've had the opportunity every year to attend the Habitat and Conservation Allocation meeting held at the division office up in Salt Lake in the spring, usually in April. That's where all the organizations come together to spend money on habitat projects. And would just like to point out that I witness every year that conservation organizations are putting millions of dollars on the ground to go towards habitat projects, and we're doing these every year to help. And I believe that helps support the cause for these increases. So, thank you.
Thank you.
My name's Mike Twitchell. I'm just representing myself. I'd just like to support the division's plan as presented. I think it's sound. It seems to make sense. And so I just want to be on the record for saying that. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Gilbert Yardley, followed by Rodney. Oh, Gibb. Followed by Rodney.
Teckert. Help us with that name when you come up, Gibb.
Taggart.
Boy, I wandered right out in these halls 15 or 20 minutes, couldn't find this place. You guys were well hid. I run a wee summer on the Panguage Lake unit up on the top of this Cedar Mountain. We've got the largest cattle permits up there. My family got those permits in 1908. My granddad did. And he was running 400 head. Now we're running 140 on those same permits. We didn't have any elk on this Cedar Mountain 25 years ago. And I don't mind seeing some. And I like to see it. And I know all you guys want to like to hunt. But these elk numbers has got completely out of hand up on that mountain. We didn't go in some of our upper pastures till the 20th of July this year. And when we got up there, them pastures were just grubbed right completely in the ground. Them elk had been there when the first blade of green grass showed up. They'd taken all of that pasture. We was way short of feed for our cattle. We've got five families that have to make a living from the outfit we've got. I love these mountains and I love the desert out there where we winter. And I want my kids to have the right to keep doing what I've doing and what I love and what I've taught them to love. To me, my permits, this mountain where we run, my ranches, my desert out there, to me, that's sacred ground. And we don't want to abuse it. We try to take the best of care of it that there is. We don't want to abuse the range. But if we didn't sell a bunch of heifer calves every year and just kept all the increase, we couldn't support those cattle. No way. And then, when we have a drought year, we voluntarily keep some cows off those permits so that grass doesn't get killed out. I'll tell you, we've got to take more cows elk off of that Panguage Lake unit. And they tell me that you only get a 50% kill on them. So if you let out 250 tags, you only get 125. That's not cutting the numbers down. We can't just keep raising these numbers forever. If you don't control these elk numbers, they're going to kill these ranges right out. Now, they say in the Panguage Lake unit, well, we've done a lot of conservation work and a lot of reseeding and everything down there on Sage Hen and down there outside the Panguage. That's all winter range. What about the summer range? That's where the critical issues are with those elk. They get up there before the first blade of green grass starts. They just took that whole country this summer, this spring. So we've got to take more of them off. For the good of the range, you've got to consider those things, gentlemen. These ranges, they can't take constant beating and survive. And we try to protect them. We want to have grass left. We want to be able to go back year after year. And we've been doing that. And we've got along fine. It's getting worse, though. This is the worst year we ever had. I never saw it when they came and they had it all eaten off before we ever got there. Now, we winter on the Southwest Desert, 25 miles west of Minersville. Best winter range in the world. My cows stay just as fat out there as they did if we fed them all the hay they can eat. But those winter ranges are extremely delicate. And if they once get killed out, you'll never get them back. Those plants are too fragile. We've not only got the wild horses, but we've got this elk problem out there, too. And we got them to take off 600. What have they got listed for this year? I couldn't get here. I'm awful sorry I couldn't get here on time, and my boys was wanting to talk, and they couldn't be here yet. But I want to talk on that Southwest Desert. We've got about 1,000 acres of private land up in the Shawnee Hills on that Southwest Desert. We spent over $30,000 of our own money, plus a lot of time, railed all those trees, burned them all up, and reseeded it all. Those elk just come in there, and we've got a drought out there that's been terrible. And they're grubbing that right in the ground along with the wild horses, but actually right up in that particular area, the elk's worse than the darn horses.
Gib, excuse me.
Yeah.
We love to hear from you. You're 2 minutes over. If we could get you to wrap up your comments, we'd appreciate that.
Well, I'm talking about two different allotments.
We've allowed 5 minutes per group. And you've had 7 so far, so we need to get you to wrap things up, please.
Well, I'm just telling you the way it is from our situation. And we hope that you'll get these numbers down, because we got to do it to live with. And I'll tell you, that Southwest Desert, between the horses and the elk, they're going to destroy that beautiful, wonderful country out there. So please give those things your very, very serious consideration, gentlemen. Because we've got to take more of those cows off, seriously. And if they're only getting a 50% kill, then we need to give them twice as many tags to get the numbers down. So please do that.
Thank you.
Gib or Rodney or Steven here yet?
No, they couldn't make it.
Okay.
Cool, that's all the comment cards. Is that right? Okay. Comments from the rack. Go ahead, Braden.
I got a comment. I'm going to ramble a little bit here, but I'll get to a point. First, I won't take more than 7 minutes. First, I want to say, you know, elk's an interesting one. It's a great problem to have an animal that you got to figure out how to kill it. Wish we could do that with mule deer, because that's really what the problem comes down to, is how do we kill enough of them? They love to grow, and the only way you kill them is bullets. But I have some concerns. Like I said a minute ago, I participated in two different. I participated in the Beaver Committee, and then in a meeting over in Richfield. And over the past couple of years, we've really had a lot of kumbaya moments in this meeting, where we've talked about sportsmen's and ranchers getting along. And frankly, that is the answer. We got enough enemies. We don't need to fight amongst ourselves. At the same time, I feel like we're getting abused a little bit, and I just want to bring up a couple little things here. Both those meetings, sportsmen were outnumbered by far by ranchers. Ranchers should have a voice, but it shouldn't be a much bigger voice than sportsmen. This is public lands we're talking about for the majority of the Beaver Unit. Beaver Unit is very little private land. I would echo what we said here earlier. If elk are in fields, let's kill them. You know, elk are smart. They learn quick. After the Richfield meeting, there was an idea to go in and kill some elk on private lands, and the private landowner didn't let us, didn't let the division. So you get up and complain and complain and complain about elk being on your land, and then when the division tries to do something about it, you tell them no. That's frustrating. Sportsmen, I don't believe, I could be wrong, I've never heard of a sportsman going to a Forest Service meeting or a BLM meeting and opposing cattle increases. Never heard of it. I've never heard of sportsmen talk about opposing cattle increases. But we sure get a lot of that from the cattlemen. I also agree that if we can increase elk, we should be able to increase cattle. We're doing a lot of habitat work, millions of dollars of habitat work. Unfortunately, the division doesn't have the power to increase cattle, but they do have the power to increase elk. And the decision should be based more on biological issues than on social issues, which they currently are. If you go to the Beaver Management Plan, it shows a list of projects completed. I believe there's 17 that it shows, and then in a bullet it says many additional projects were completed by the Forest Service. There's also additional projects completed by the BLM. Yet, the primary limiting factor was the cattleman at the meeting said, if you continue to do projects, we may allow you to increase. First of all, I don't know why the cattlemen get to tell us we may allow you. That was a sore point for me. But history doesn't prove that that promise holds any weight. I would like to see the limiting factors based on habitat as the primary limiting factor and not on opinion. And it just seems like we're kind of beating the same drum here, and we have been for years. So that's my comment.
Mac?
How did I know that was coming next?
There we go. To my knowledge, there haven't been any increases on cattle. In fact, we've been, the last 40 years, we've been decreased about 60-70% what we had. Okay. And another thing, we work on AUMs. We paid money to buy those AUMs, and also we pay an annual fee to take that grass. Okay. Okay, so that's what I'm saying. That's where we stand on that. Okay. And Gibbs right. The elk, at least on my allotment, same thing. We go up there, there was nothing. Elk takes the feed all for start when the snow recedes and goes and takes it. Usually there's some left for us, but this summer there wasn't any. I look at Gibbs units, Southwest Desert, overpopulation approximately 600. Panguitch Lake, overpopulation approximately 600. So he has a legitimate complaint. And I think that we want to get along, but if you look what form John Keeler presented for the Farm Bureau, you know, I think a lot of thought went into that, John, appreciate that, on between wildlife and livestock. Because it's a, you know, and on private land, I've talked about that earlier, you know. We have no complaints. We just want to maintain our share that we've got. And if there's an increase, we'd like to get it. Because we've been decreased 67% more than we was 40 years ago. And the range looks a lot better, and there wasn't any elk then.
I'd like to make a comment first.
Go ahead.
It'll be interesting to see the elk numbers, but I don't know if they're going to count elk on Panguitch Lake this year. But I know that since August of this year, they've been pounding the elk hard. killing cows and spikes. And I hope they bring the numbers down. If the numbers are still up, Gibb, I think they should pound them again next year. Because I agree, if we have an objective, we have an obligation to stay there. But I think the effort's being made. And they've been trying really hard this year to bring those numbers down, and there's still more cow elk hunts coming up, and I hope to kill two of them myself. But I think that the efforts are being made, and so I hope that we are supporting you now and that we continue to do so in the future. And I think we're moving in the right direction. You know, sometimes I feel like we get here and we're opposing each other, but, you know, the other times I think, you know, in reality, we are trying to meet everybody's goals, and we are trying to work together, and we're trying to address Panguitch Lake and Southwest Desert. Nobody will argue with you. Those are critical issues, and I think it's being done, and I'm pretty sure it's being done, and I hope we're successful this year. Brian?
Like Braden said, it's an interesting problem to have to try to figure out how to kill, like, what's the best way to kill an elk. And I think, like you mentioned, we put a bunch of cow tags out. We put a bunch of hunters in the field. I just wonder if it would be beneficial or even if it would make a difference. But I would like to see, with that general season muzzleloader tag on these units that are chronically over objective, why can't these guys with a muzzleloader go ahead and take a cow if they're there? I mean, if we're chronically over objective, let's create another opportunity to kill another cow. Because so I'm just wondering if this board would be open to something like that. Is it, you got a?
Yeah, so the strategy, may I, Mr. Chair? Okay. The strategy that you're talking about is if you have a muzzleloader elk hunter that's already in the field, could they harvest a cow elk similar to what archery hunters do, where you can hunt a bull or a cow? Yeah, so that's a strategy that was outlined in our statewide elk plan that said to explore it. We didn't make that recommendation this last spring because we had so many changes that we were making, and we wanted to chew on that idea a little bit more. That's likely a recommendation that you're going to see from the division this spring as we do antlerless. It really falls in the antlerless more so than the bucks, bulls, once in a lifetime, because it's not a permit that you're applying for of those species. But it's probably something you'll likely see this spring.
Okay. Sometimes I want to make sure I bring it up so I don't miss my opportunity to bring it up. But I think it's a good idea, and we'll deal with it this spring then.
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks, Brian. Go ahead, Wade.
So, as I look through these elk numbers, a few things stick out to me. We have this same conversation every year. It's a good conversation to have. We need to keep having it. To me, our biggest issue is getting the elk killed. We talk about throwing more permits at them, and in all honesty, we've done that a lot, and it doesn't help. We're just not getting anything killed, and a variety of reasons why. And I just want to take my hat off to the division. They've gotten pretty creative this last 8, 10, 12 months, trying to figure out ways, strategies, hunts that will be more successful, and this private lands only option is one of those. An example is the Ponsagant has that strategy on it this year. We're right in the middle of it, and we've already killed twice as many cows as we ever have. I just think if we can get the permits in the hands of the people that know the area, that it's accessible to them, they're motivated to go hunt, we're going to kill more. And that's what we have to get more serious about, is using these creative strategies and methods to get in there and just have elk die. I mean, that's our goal. We don't care, you know, how many permits are issued. We just care about dead elk. So I do think we need to get behind the division when they have some of these creative ideas, because I do think it'll work.
Mike?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd be remiss if I didn't say something about wild horses, even though I do agree with the presentation and the comments that have been made regarding increasing elk hunting opportunities, and I think the division has done a good job the last couple of years of giving Spike Hunt the opportunity to take a cow elk, and I think it's been a good program. Back on the wild horse issue, of course, we all know that basically the BLM has their hands tied. They can't do anything unless Congress decides to act. And that is a reality that I think hits a lot of the ranchers in the face that struggle with wild horses. If you go out in the Southwest desert, there's probably quadruple the number of horses that is allowed in the appropriate management level that the BLM has established out there. And they know it. The ranchers know it because they have to graze those lands. If you go around a spring out there, it is totally denuded within a mile of that spring. And the elk are run off, the deer are run off, and the horses are just living right there because there's no other water. One thing I think the BLM could and should, and I think it would be very appropriate for this body and the State Wildlife Board to push a little bit, is to maintain the vegetation projects that have been done that have been just left to grow back with sagebrush and juniper and pinyon and move on to new projects, but the other projects are just left. There's 40-year-old projects out in that desert that are out in the West Hills that have never been touched since they were railed 40, 50 years ago, and the brush is so choking out the grass. There's no feed for the horses. There's no feed for the cows. There's no feed for the elk. And about 5 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, the BLM started a evaluation on maintaining those, but it got dropped out for some reason. To me, that would be very appropriate to increase the forage out there so we can get through these tough times until Congress finally decides to do something with the horses. I think the horse problem would alleviate a lot of problems that we see out there. And I think the division stands behind that and appreciate their support on what we can do with those critters out there. Anyway, that's my 2 cents worth on the horse issue. I have to deal with it in the county in my job quite often, so I'd be remiss if I didn't bring it up. Thank you.
I appreciate you bringing that up. I represent the BLM here. I can't speak specifically for the offices in Cedar or other areas besides Kanab. I manage the Kanab field office. I'm the Kanab manager. If you're familiar with the Kanab area, we're doing thousands of acres of restoration projects. In fact, we started some more this week in the area we call the Yellow Jacket out, the Coral Pink Sand Dunes. They've been really successful for us. We've also been trying to work with the livestockmen to try to establish or at least give back some of those AUMs that have been reduced in the past. It's a delicate balance in there. But going back to what was just said, we do try to go back to some of our previous projects. We don't just try to jump ahead to new projects. We do try to go to those previous projects and try to maintain those. And if you thought it would help, because I represent the BLM, I don't mind going to these other offices where there have been some treatments, and maybe those treatments have been ignored, and I can make a push there to do that if you'd like me to do that.
Want to speak to that?
Well, there's kind of two different time frames, as most of you are aware, when a lot of habitat work was done, and I think everybody does a pretty good job of maintaining the more recent projects, the stuff that's done over the last 15 years, but the projects that were done back in the 60s and 70s was another time when they were doing a lot of chaining. I think those are more the projects that Mike's talking about, and it's... Some of them are essentially just become new treatments rather than maintenance projects on some of those that are 40, 50 years old.
Can you go back?
Yeah.
Gene.
I'm sitting here between the sportsman and the agriculture, representing the public at large, and I grew up on the agricultural end, and I have a lot of understanding for them, but for the public at large, when we keep seeing more orange paint on the trees and rocks and so forth in places where you couldn't do anybody any harm, that isn't even fenced, and it's questionable whether it's deeded or not, we get really uptight about this. And when we have people that want to have more wildlife killed, but not on their land, it bothers us a little bit. And that's about all I got.
How about on my right? Any comments? Go ahead, Sean.
Yeah, I think I need to give a shout out to the Division's Habitat Program. We about 5 years ago, we had a slight increase in our population objective, and we had a little bit of heartburn over that. It was only 150 head, but over the years, you know, they made the commitment to certain focus areas, and they have put in literally hundreds of thousands of dollars and treated tens of thousands of acres. Matter of fact, we had the first increase since I've been here in cattle numbers on the Oak Creek allotment after the Clay Springs fire. We couldn't afford to seed that. The only thing we could do is put in winter wheat, which is gone in a year, just to stabilize the soil. The division stepped in, and they paid for the seed. They paid for flying it on. This year, matter of fact, next week, they're going to pay for us to chain and reseed a fire scar up above Holden. And they're pretty much footing the bill for it. You know, over the years, they put water developments in. They've done a great job. And sometimes we look at these management plans and we think they're just paper. They've really put their money where their mouth is from us in the Pavant unit when it comes to habitat improvements. And I just really appreciate Kendall Bagley, Gary Beasant, a lot of those guys for doing that. And I also appreciate the opportunity to look at these plans. Like I say, we've got, you know, a lot of permittees are important to us too, and we value them. And there's nothing's ever perfect. There's going to be problems, there's bumps in the road, but I've been pretty happy with how overall things have been addressed in the past.
Thank you. Okay, I think we're ready to get to a motion. Do we need to review any comments? Come on, Wade.
We don't need to review any comments.
Okay, make a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion. We accept the elk management unit plan as presented.
I'll second.
Okay. We have first and a second. Any discussion on the motion? Okay, Mac.
I'd like to amend the motion to make a mandate at what Bill Christensen said about killing elk on private land, you know, subject to the private land owner's permission. What? Year round, yeah. So,
is that in the plan?
I don't see it's in the plan.
Which plan specifically? We have a lot of plans tonight.
Well, it's the southern region then.
Okay.
And I don't know about the northern region, but I think we represent the southern region where we had a bunch of problems.
Yeah.
In every county. I think Garfield, Wayne, Paiute, Kane, everybody has problems. Beaver?
Mac, I think all of the plans address depredation and talk to, you know, remove an elk from private land. And I mean, what that language is already in every one of those plans. What specifically are you asking for?
Well, but I don't think we're making any progress with it, though.
I disagree, but, you know.
Well, I'm speaking from the area where I see it personally. In fact, it's it's growing rather than cutting back.
Okay, so we have an amendment to the plan that we, help me with the amendment. Do we put stronger language? Do we put more effort? Do we, what do
I'd
we
I'd like to see stronger language in the plan for the southern region, specifically then on what Bill Christensen said. I think that Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation has something to do with the elk in the area, and I think that we ought to honor what he said. He's one of the board of directors.
Motion to amend. Stronger language.
Hey, Kevin, Mr. Chair. I think a lot of this, though, I don't... I'm Colby Jones, private lands coordinator for the state. I think... So a lot of depredation and how we do that is in state code. So we address depredation in these plans, and we address problem issues. We've been very good this year about how, I mean, every request for division removal that's been sent in has been approved. We've gone out and removed animals. We've worked with private landowners. We have a depredation hunt and elk going on right now in San Pete. So wherever we've had problems, I mean, and we keep saying that we've taken this approach, and we have. I mean, I see the requests come in. We process the requests. We go out. We remove the animals. We help the landowners remove the animals. They remove the animals. We use public hunters to remove the animals. So it's happening, Mac. But just to enter in a request to remove animals at any time in any place on private land, these are protected under state code. And so I don't know what a request... And that's what I hear you saying, is that stronger language that... You know, and there's protection for private landowners in state code as well. So
let's get that down to upon the private landowner's request.
Okay. I'm not trying to ignore your motion, Mac. I'm just trying to get it.
Okay.
Get it spelled.
We got to narrow down then.
In writing, so it's concise, and we know what we're voting on.
So, Mac, tell me if I captured this. So your motion to amend is that we add stronger language to the Southern Region plans to address elk depredation on private lands upon the private landowner's request. Is that?
That'll do.
Okay. Thank you. Do we have a second? Okay, we have a second from Gene. Any discussion on the amendment?
Craig.
Sorry. Any discussion? Okay, we'll vote on the amendment first, which let me read it one more time. That we add stronger language in the Southern Region plans to address elk depredation on private lands upon the private landowner's request. All in favor?
You got to count?
Just counting. Okay, hold your hands up high.
Hi.
All opposed. Hold your hands up.
So pass. What's the count, Stephanie?
8-4?
8-5.
5? What did I miss on the opposed?
Hold your hands up again one more time on the opposed.
Oh, there you go. Got it. Sorry.
Is it 8-5?
Yes.
Okay, so the amendment passes. Now we'll go back to the main motion. Is there any further discussion on the motion?
So that's 13.
All those in favor? Is that unanimous? Okay, thank you. I will move on to item number 6, which is the Box Bulls and Once in a Lifetime season dates. This will be Justin Shannon as well.
Yeah, that's it. Thank you. Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair and RAC. Tonight I'm going to present the Bucks Bulls Once in a Lifetime season dates and boundary changes. Louder? Sorry about that. For 2017. So to begin, we'll start with the general season deer hunt dates. These are really no changes from last year, other than we're just simply moving up the season date one day to avoid a Sunday opener. So archery, again, starts August 19th, goes through September 15th, that 28th day hunt. Muzzleloader, that same nine-day season, just moved up a day. And same thing for any weapon hunts for mule deer. For our elk general season dates, the same thing. All these hunts, same as last year, just simply moved up one day for the archery spike bull, archery any elk, any weapon and muzzleloader hunts. Moving on to some statewide changes, we don't have many, but the first one is to add three new limited entry muzzleloader deer units. These units are managed for 18 to 20 bucks per 100 does and are exceeding their objectives on that three-year average. So the units that we'd recommend adding are the Mount Dutton, Ogden, and Plateau Fish Lake. And then with that, we'd recommend discontinuing the hunt on the following unit, the Plateau Boulder Kaparowitz. This is a recommendation that's got some discussion in some of the other RAC meetings, and so the reason for recommending this tonight is because the three-year average is below that 20, but if you look at the trend, and this is some data that has come up, it's really trending in the right direction, from 16 bucks per 100 does to 19 to over 20 this last year. So looking at other statewide recommendations, we recommend adding two limited entry bull elk hunts that overlap the general season spike elk hunt in early to mid-October. This is a hunt strategy that we tried for the first time last year on several of our units throughout the state, and we'd like to recommend adding it to the Central Mountains Manti and Wasatch Mountains units. For the southern region recommendations, we recommend adding a mountain goat hunt on the Mount Dutton unit. That population is doing really well, and we feel like we have enough of a population to begin harvest. And then also add an archery pronghorn hunt on the Panguitch Lake Zion North unit. Finally, we'd like to recommend issuing a non-resident permit on the Kaparowitz West Bighorn Sheep unit. The reason that a resident or a non-resident permit would be recommended and presented, we make changes like this all the time in the RAC packet. This one has different implications. In the past, a non-resident could apply. If that non-resident obtained that permit, they could hunt the Kaparowitz East, West, or Escalante. And now, where this is a standalone non-resident, that non-resident can only hunt the West, and the non-resident permit that obtains it on the East can only hunt the East and Escalante unit. Does that make sense? So, okay. Southeast region recommendations recommend splitting the 9 Mile Range Creek Bighorn Sheep unit into the Gray Canyon and Jack Creek units. And these season dates will run from November 1st through the 30th. And this is a change from last year where this was all one big unit and we had two hunts, an early and a late, similar to our Zion. And what we're doing is we're splitting the unit. The Jack Creek is much different than the Gray Canyon, the lower portion of that unit. And we're going to give hunters 30 days if this recommendation is approved. Also, we'd like to alter the San Juan South Bighorn Sheep boundary to include the San Juan River. A lot of nice bighorns down there. The populations are doing well, and we'd want to include that into the San Juan South unit. We recommend adding an archery and muzzleloader management buck hunt on the Henry Mountains. If you'll remember this spring, the buck-to-doe ratio on the Henrys was 65 bucks per 100 does. And we should have recommended increases in permits, but that one hunt that we have already pretty congested, and so this is a way that we could increase hunting opportunity in the future and when that buck-to-doe ratio is exceeding objectives. And then finally, add a pronghorn archery hunt to the Centerfell Desert and 9 Mile Range Creek units, and a muzzleloader hunt to the Centerfell North unit. For the northern region, recommend discontinuing the Pilot Mountain Bighorn Sheep Hunt. This is a hunt that we turn on and off every year, every other year. We share it with Nevada. In the central region, I recommend discontinuing the Stansbury's Mountains Bighorn Sheep Hunt. Its population's not doing very well right now. For the northeast region, recommend altering the Book Cliffs Wild Horse Bench Hunt to include the 9 Mile area. And these season dates would run from August 1st to January 31st. These are very long, liberal seasons for a bison hunt, but what we're really trying to solve here is we have bison that come off the Book Cliffs unit onto the 9 Mile unit, and we don't have a hunt. We don't have a boundary for it, and so this is a way to get hunter pressure and direct that to get the harvest where we need it and push bison back onto the Book Cliffs. Also, recommend adding a bison hunt, a cow-only one on the Book Cliffs unit. Recommend changing the Book Cliffs bison hunt, the season dates, to October 14th through December 1st. Recommend changing season dates on the North Slope Three Corners elk hunt, simply moving it back a week. And recommend combining the North Slope Three Corners bear top and the West Daggett bighorn sheep hunts into one hunt up in that northeast part of the state. Switching gears a little bit, last RAC meeting, I believe it was, Yuba came and proposed an informational, Utah Bowman's Association, on some strategies that would allow archers in the state to have a unique hunting opportunity. And the gist of their proposal was essentially you would be able to exchange your permit that you drew through the draw and have hunt dates either before or after the season. And so that way you'd be the only hunter in the field with a bow at the time. The Wildlife Board, they asked us to review this proposal, look at some data, and provide a recommendation for the RACs this November. So what this data looks like is on the far right we have a bunch of averages. So for bighorn sheep, the average success rate on our bighorn hunts is 96%. The average days hunted is about 6.5. The season lengths are quite long, 51 days for Rockies on average and 33 for desert, 51 days for deserts and 33 for Rockies. And the average number of permits per hunt is 3. And so as you can see on the left, the graph there shows permits per unit or permits per hunt, and they're kind of categorized. So you can see 84% of the hunts have between 1 and 5 permits for bighorn sheep. And so we don't have gobs of permits in these units. And this will be important as we get to our recommendation and what the why behind it tonight. And again, about 16% of our hunts for bighorn have between 6 and 10 permits. For mountain goats, success rate similar to bighorn sheep. Number of days hunted, about 3.5. Season length, 50 days on average. And number of permits per hunt is 8. And you can see here, only about 38% of our hunts have between 1 and 5 permits. The bulk of them have 6 to 10, and in some cases, 16 to 20. For bison, average success rate's about 85%, days hunted is 3.5, season length's 24, and permits per hunt is 14. And as you can see, the bison hunts, they have a lot more permits in them. The bulk of them have more than 11 in these units on the Book Cliffs and the Henrys. And then finally for moose, really high success rates again, 94%. Number of days hunted on average is 4, season length 34 days, and number of permits per hunt is 6. But again, 3/4 of our hunts have between 1 and 5 permits. And so what does all this data mean, and what would be the division's recommendation? We looked at that and we said, okay, to carve out once-in-a-lifetime hunts and have them be standalone that would be archery only, is there the need? And as you look at a lot of these, 12 of the 25 bighorn sheep hunts that we have, there's 2 permits or fewer. And so if you draw half of these units, you are the only one in the field with one other person. And again, average hunt day is about 6.5 days. And so we didn't feel like that we didn't make the recommendation to add a bunch of once-in-a-lifetime archery-only hunts. Instead, we looked at adding 7 days to the end of each once-in-a-lifetime hunt that would be archery-only. And so you draw your permit, you have your normal hunt days, and if you're not successful, you have 7 more days to hunt in the field with archery equipment only. You don't have to swap out tags, there's no fees, and this is valid for every hunter that draws a permit, a once-in-a-lifetime permit. These wouldn't be valid for hunts on Antelope Island, the Pilot Mountains, CWMUs, or hunts that end on January 31st. And if you have multiple hunts occurring, once-in-a-lifetime hunts for the same area, and the same species in the same area, that seven-day extension would be applied at the end of the last hunt. So on the henries where we have four bison hunts, it would be the 7 days following the last day of the hunt, of the last hunt. Access to some of these hunt areas is not guaranteed. Part of that's because we've extended a lot of these hunts already, and aerial surveys may occur during these hunts, especially in some of our desert bighorn units. Some key dates for 2017, the big game drawing for Bucks Bulls once-in-a-lifetime dedicated hunter applicants and lifetime license holders, January 26th through March 2nd. If you're just trying to obtain a bonus or preference point, that date's extended to March 16th. Results will be posted by the end of May. And then finally, our hunters with disabilities, the general season hunt extension dates. These are pretty token. We brought them through every year. It's essentially a five-day pre- or post-hunt extension for these hunters. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Okay. Do I have questions from the rack? Go ahead, Dale. What's your numbers on Mount Dutton as far as goats now? And how many permits? I know you're not doing permit numbers yet, but what are you looking at roughly as an estimate, what you would give out on that unit?
Let's have Josh answer that. He'd probably do a better job than I would.
They want to know who your favorite boy band is.
Let me raise the mic to man level from little midget ginger. We did a survey on August 9th this year, and we flew and we counted 47 total goats. We had 30 adults and 17 kids. We didn't really differentiate between the billies and nannies, but we had 30 adults. We saw at least six that were significantly larger, you know, appeared to be billies. But off of that, as of now, from that data, we're just going to be conservative. We want to give an opportunity, but we're going to be conservative and probably end up issuing like one permit. But the governor's tag and sportsman's tag have the potential as well to potentially harvest there. So we'll probably start with one and go from there as that population increases. That's the first time we've ever flown it and surveyed it. So we're just going to kind of start conservatively.
Josh hurt my feelings.
Any other questions? Okay, go ahead.
I understand you're right that you're dropping that Boulder muzzleloader deer hunt.
Yeah.
Just on that unit. Okay, I don't know this place to make a comment, but I hunt over there and I'm always there for that muzzleloader elk deer hunt. And then, of course, the muzzleloader big bull hunt's going on at the same time. And it has been a mess over there the last 2 years with muzzleloader deer hunters having cow tags chasing the same elk herd that the big bull muzzleloader hunters are trying to hunt. And I applaud you there. I don't know if any other units have that problem, but if I waited 15 years to get a big bull tag there and then had it messed up by a bunch of guys chasing cows, I'd be one mad feller.
Just to clarify, maybe I presented that wrong, and if I did, I apologize. What this isn't the general season muzzleloader hunt. Yeah, this is the late one, that one that essentially goes end of October to the first week of November. I apologize if I presented it wrong. So.
And then if I ever draw that tag, I might be one mad hunter then, huh?
Fair enough. Clarify.
Okay, Gene.
On these late hunts, they're done because they're over objective. Why not just give out more permits on the regular hunt?
This is a strategy that was put together in the statewide mule deer plan, and what we were struggling with was trying to provide more limited entry hunting opportunity for hunters throughout the state. The number of people that are applying for limited entry mule deer hunts is far outpacing the number of permits that we issue, and this was one of the this was a really good recommendation that I felt, because instead of taking a unit and saying it has to be all general season or all limited entry, we kind of took a page out of Colorado's book, where they hunt their deer based on timing. And so this is a way to say, okay, it's a little after the season, not a lot of hunters out there, but you would use your limited entry bonus points on a general season unit. And so, I mean, certainly if we had issues where we wanted to increase or decrease the buck-to-doe ratio, we would make those recommendations like we did this last spring, where over 4,000 general season hunters had that opportunity. But this is just a way to provide that for the limited entry hunters. Does that help?
Yeah, thank you. Also, I understand that there's at least some interest in a true primitive weapons hunt. Could sidelock, patch ball, and longbow.
Yeah.
Could some of these late season hunts be tried on that basis?
You could certainly use your longbow or your patch, or not your longbow. Not this is a muzzleloader hunt, but your more primitive muzzleloader gun. I mean, you can use that in your muzzleloader hunt, this hunt, or your any weapon hunt. We haven't gone to the lengths of carving out its own season for a very primitive weapon hunt, because you can use them in the muzzleloader or the any weapon already.
This is a muzzleloader only.
Sure.
The way it is now.
Yeah, you can use that primitive weapon on this muzzleloader hunt.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
The primitive muzzleloader.
Correct.
But archery is...
Archery isn't
included.
No, you'd either have to use your primitive, your longbow and your archery hunt, or your any weapon hunt.
Yeah.
Thanks. Brian?
On this October limited entry elk hunt on the Wasatch Mountains, where were you guys planning on pulling the tags? Because right now you've got an archery, you've got a September rifle hunt, and then October or November / the late rifle hunt. Where were you planning on pulling those out?
We haven't had those conversations yet. The way that the statewide plan says is if you have 100 permits for an elk unit, 25 of them have to go to archery, 15% of them have to go to muzzleloader. So that 40 permits is already set in stone. And then there's quite a bit of flexibility with what you can do with the other 60 permits. And the only limitation that you could do is if you have an early rifle hunt, you can't have more than 60% of your rifle permits in that one. And so we certainly wouldn't exceed that, but whether we pull them from the late or the early, not sure yet. Yeah, that'll be the spring meeting, and yeah. Okay.
Go ahead,
Justin. Back to that Boulder Kaparowitz late muzzleloader hunt. You said we dropped below the 20 objective for the buck-to-doe ratio. What is it?
Right now it's 19.
And how did we end up with that late hunt if our three-year average was already under? You said we're on an upward trend.
It wasn't. So last year when we looked at it, so 2013, your buck-to-doe ratio was about 16.4, if I remember right. And then it went to 19.9. I'm sorry if I'm off a little bit on these numbers. And then 20.6. And so the last 3 years, even though our trend is doing this, our buck-to-doe ratio has fallen, because in 2012, our buck-to-doe ratio was really high. It was like mid-20s, which pulled that average way up. And so if you look at the Boulder unit, really the outlier on there is that 2013 classification where we're at 16 bucks per 100 does. Everything else has been at or above that 20. And so that's why the discussion in some of the other racks. So.
Sure.
I know it's counterintuitive because the trend's going up over the last 3 years, but it still fell this year because we were so high in 2012.
Sure. No, that makes sense.
Okay.
And I guess my question or point is that kind of hate to lose that opportunity. I'm a pretty big fan of those late hunts just because it kind of dilutes things and gets it solves some problems. So I kind of hate to lose it, and I'm sure it'll probably be right back next year if those trends continue.
Yeah.
Would it hurt anyone's feelings if we maybe made a recommendation to keep it in anticipation we'd have it back?
Sir, not from my chair. I mean, the region might have other thoughts. Who's over the boulder on this? Jim, what are your thoughts on that? I'd hate to speak for you.
No.
It wouldn't hurt your feelings, or no, we shouldn't do it.
So Wade, this is one where we were trying to manage to the letter of the law.
Sure.
And I didn't want to come through with recommendations that we knew were below that. And really, this also is one, if you look at the strategy, it says explore doing this. So it didn't have a lot of additional language. If you look at our other recommendations in the mule deer plan, a lot of it says manage that 3-year buck to doe ratio and take trend into consideration. We didn't even know if we were going to do this, and so that's why we didn't get into the other detail of taking trend. But to be consistent, if we were managing this like our other hunts, there's a high likelihood we would have brought trend. But you know, this being the first one that fell below, I'm glad we're having the discussion, because I think it'll help us with future recommendations that kind of follow suit. So.
Okay, good. Any more questions? Oh, well, hold on just a minute. On that boulder hunt, how many permits was there, like 4 or 5 was all last year?
Let me look. Does anyone have that off the top of their head? How many permits we have last year? I think 5. I can double check real quick.
I mean, is there an option you could just cut tags in half or your borderline on that buck to doe ratio rather than do away with the hunt?
I mean, yeah, certainly in the spring, I mean, that'll be an option that we can bring forward. The one thing that we wanted to do as an agency is kind of standardize these. And so any of these late season hunts, 5 has been the minimum. And so I think if we were to go below 5, we just wouldn't have the hunt. I mean, at that point, because then you can have a non-resident and some other things. And
makes sense.
Yeah, I'll double check that, though, make sure it's 5.
Okay, Gene.
These hunts are late season hunts are when you're over 20 bucks per 100 does, is that right?
Correct, yeah.
But you haven't counted yet, so are you a year behind on this data?
Yeah, we always will be, because this is 2013, 14, and 15's numbers. And so, I mean, if that were the case, we would have shut it off early last year. So we're always going to have to be a year behind, Gene. Yeah.
Okay. Well, any questions from the audience? Oh, hold on. One more.
Last spring at the when we were picking numbers, we had some complaints for overcrowding on the Pine Valley Zion and Panguitch unit.
Yeah.
It was brought up to maybe do a split hunt. Has there been any talk about that for season dates on some of these units?
You know, we have to have more of those conversations, and that's one that I'm excited to meet with the managers about this spring when we have our big group meeting. And the reason I think we need to have that conversation is we have some units that have just extremely high buck-to-doe ratios. And to say we can throw more permits in our current hunt structures, I don't know if that's realistic. And really, it might solve two challenges. One is adding an additional hunt. Is that kind of what you're getting after, if we added an additional rifle hunt?
Yeah,
if you could do that, you could lower buck-to-doe ratios without affecting the crowding. The way that we went about it last year is we increased permits. We put more of them to archery and muzzleloader, which I think is fine. Mm-hmm. The more I've looked at that, I think it's going to be difficult to track over time, because as I come with recommendations, they're already confusing enough. And if I'm having to say this one has 56% of the permits in rifle and this one has 24, and I mean, that gets convoluted. And so there's some real positives to what you're talking about, and I think statewide the managers and biologists, myself, are going to have to talk about some of these, and we have some ideas. We're probably a year out on them. So yeah. But can I ask a question back?
Sure.
How would you feel about having an additional hunt like that?
I was at the Mule Deer Committee meeting, and it was brought up. A lot of discussion. We were 2 5-day hunts, but I think we ended up with 2 9-day hunts. But where to put them?
Yeah.
You know, you'd overlap the general season elk hunt if you moved it early, and you don't want to move it too late. So
yeah,
and that's put it on the calendar, I guess, is the big problem.
Okay, it's certainly something we're going to have to look at. And the other thing is, the reason we couldn't move forward with that recommendation immediately, because I remember working through some of that, and it's actually a strategy in the deer plan to provide some hunts that have deer and elk overlap, and for some good reasons too. In the northern part of the state, they used to have a buck bull combo where you could go out and you'd have a buck tag and a bull tag, and the feedback we had on that was great. And so if we could have some hunts where your buck hunt and your spike elk hunt or whatever it would be overlapped, it's fewer days that hunters have to take off of work, and there's some real benefits. And the reason we didn't move forward with it though is we hadn't completed the statewide elk plan, and we wanted to get some feedback on how comfortable hunters would be with that. And both plans, there was high acceptance of having the overlap, so we have that data now.
Right.
Thanks, Rusty.
Okay. Questions from the audience? Okay, we do have some comment cards. We'll move to those. First, we have Ben Lauder, followed by Bryce.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ben Lauder, representing the Utah Bowman's Association. First, I'd like to say we support the recommendations from the division as presented, with one exception. That exception is concerning this proposal, which I handed out, put copies on your tables before the meeting started. Before I get into that proposal, I'd like to point out, if you look across the top of that sheet, you'll see four different organizations on here. This is a joint proposal from SFW, from Yuba, from the Mule Deer Foundation, and the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation. As a little bit of background, and Justin alluded to this as well, back in September, and I'm sure you all remember, I brought an informational proposal to the RACS and the Wildlife Board concerning archery-only once-in-a-lifetime hunt opportunities. That proposal, the intent of that proposal, was to offer a archery-only opportunity for once-in-a-lifetime species with a couple criteria, and those criteria were to not create new hunts and to not affect current draw odds. As we took that proposal through the RACS and the Wildlife Board meeting, we got a lot of feedback, which is exactly what we were looking for. And a lot of that feedback, a good portion of that feedback, was contrary to what we initially anticipated public reaction. A lot of that feedback was, why don't we go ahead and ask for some new hunts and create some new and additional opportunities and see if we can't maybe address point creep with once-in-a-lifetime species. We're all aware that it takes, you know, 20-plus points to draw a lot of these once-in-a-lifetime species tags, and if you're not up in that upper tier, you may never draw a tag. And so I found through this process there is a lot of opinion out there that we'd like to do, from the public, that we'd like to do something to try to address that. And so we went back to the drawing table, and we met with these other organizations, and this proposal that I handed out is what we came up with. So I'll go through the proposal and then mention a couple of talking points. Our proposals were recommending adding six new archery-only once-in-a-lifetime hunts. Two Rocky Mountain Bighorn Sheep, one on the 9 Mile Jack Creek Unit, one on the Box Elder Newfoundland Mountains. And you can see those season dates. The 9 Mile Jack Creek is in September. That Box Elder is in December. These are both going to be difficult hunts, especially that Jack Creek. It's you're going to be hunting timbered sheep, and the access on that unit is extremely difficult. On Desert Bighorn Sheep, we're recommending a new hunt on the Zion and the Caparis West, both with a November season. Now, traditionally, that November timeframe is known as the rut for desert sheep. However, personally, I'm not a sheep guy, but Troy Justinson is the one that helped us with this proposal. He is a sheep guy. He assures me that those two units have Arizona and Nevada bloodlines, and thus they rut early. And so those November season dates actually aren't hardcore rutting timeframes for those hunts. We're also recommending a new hunt on the Henry Mountains with an October season, and a new mountain goat hunt in the Uintas with a late August, early September season. Now on that, I listed that our initial thought on that mountain goat hunt was to have the entire Uintas be a unit. We've had some discussions with the DWR since, and I haven't had a chance to change my document, but we would like to alter that recommendation to pick either the central mountain or the high Uintas central unit or the west unit, based on some feedback we've got from some DWR staff. This proposal, my first listed benefit there is that this will address point creep. To me, that's the biggest issue here. For years, we've heard we've got to do something to address this, these point issues on once in a lifetime, and we've never tried anything. So this is an initial attempt. We're not asking for a lot of tags, and I understand that we set tags in the spring. What we'd like to see is two tags on each one of these hunts, so that there's a bonus tag and a random tag. And I understand that that's a minimal impact on the number of tags, but I do believe that if we try this and it works and people like it, we could increase that benefit over time. Last week, the question was raised, what's the success rate going to be on these hunts? And we really don't know. So I went to work and did some research on what Colorado does. Colorado has a number of bighorn sheep and mountain goat archery-only hunts. And what I found on the bighorn sheep hunt is that the difference is about 30% success lower on the archery versus the rifle on those same units. And the mountain goat is about 20% less. We have a neighboring state that's doing exactly what we're asking for here, and they do see a lower success rate, which in the end could lead to an increase in tags, an increase of additional opportunity, and hopefully help address that point creep issue. And thus we would expect lower success rates on these hunts. Also, we expect that a lot of the animals that are, well, some of the animals that would be taken, we expect may be animals that that may not be sought after by a rifle hunter. Am I getting close on time? All right. Anyway, these are the hunts that we're recommending. We ask you to seriously consider and take action on these tonight. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bryce.
Bryce Pilling, Sportsman for Fish and Wildlife. We support the division's recommendations with two exceptions. We'd like to see the late muzzleloader hunt on the Boulder unit kept, and we don't like the extended season on the archery, but we do support the Bowman's Association on this new proposal. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Boyd Harris.
This is a little bit off topic and changing the subject a little bit, but are you gentlemen aware that in the state of Utah is the only intermountain state that allows baiting of deer for any purpose, for hunting especially? There's a number of reasons I think that it would be beneficial to do away with baiting, one of which is the question of fair chase. I believe in baiting that eliminates at least a certain degree of fair chase, possible increase in disease by having them eaten out of the same troughs and whatnot. There's a number of ways to deal with somebody who may want to feed the deer for horn growth or growing the bigger bucks or whatnot. I checked into this in a Lucky Buck Deer Supplements. Has a website out there that tells you all of the regulations for all the states about baiting deer. Number of states do allow baiting, and they're more southern and more eastern, but the Rocky Mountain area does not allow it except in Utah. But they describe baiting as anything that you put out that a deer might ingest as to draw them or keep them in an area. There are states who have a 10-day rule that says 10 days prior to any hunt in your area, baits must be pulled. And that's not just stop putting the stuff out, but all the bait has to be pulled. And that's what I've got to say, is I believe the baiting goes a long ways to eliminate the large bucks from the population that the general public, sportsmen who are not professional hunters, don't have a chance to get into the big bucks. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, I believe that's all the comment cards that we have on this item. Comments from the rack.
I just need some clarification. So SFW and UBA, you don't support the 7 days on the end of those hunts. This is, you just want these particular hunts. Is that what you're saying?
So initially that was our stance, but honestly, I don't know that we couldn't have both. The Northern Region recommended supporting some of these hunts, and then on the rest of the once a lifetimes, doing the 7 day extension. I don't see a problem with that. So.
Okay, go ahead, Rusty.
So that on the point, on the number of permits, will we have to increase permits on these once in lifetimes to compensate for these?
Yes, me or Bryce? Two
more. You.
Sorry about that. I couldn't tell who you were looking at. So, the way it stands now is when we go out and we do our flights and we see a certain number of Class 3 or Class 4 rams, we say, okay, this unit can have 5 permits. And as of now, what we'd have to do is take a portion of those permits, it sounds like with this proposal too, and shift them into archery. So you'd have 2 in archery, 3 in the regular once-in-a-lifetime hunt. Now, if over time, to Ben's point, what he's saying is if these success rates were lower and they were significantly lower, you could increase permits over time and you can actually add a few. But initially, you would have to remove them from the other hunts where once-in-a-lifetime hunters have been applying for so long. We wouldn't just add permits. We have to issue permits according to the plans. So if the plan says you can issue 5, we can't just come with 7 to accommodate this type of request. So
you're really not aiding the point creep other than if you kill fewer animals with the archery?
Yeah.
He's saying he's going to be 20% less. If you're at 95% success, you're going to be at 75% on the other two.
Yeah, it depends on the hunt and how many permits we have that are issued over, that are allocated to that. Right. And it may be up front that you're just cutting the pie a different way. Now, if over time we can show, okay, we're actually lowering success rates and you're issuing more permits as a result of that, certainly, then I think there's a case to be made that you could increase permits but still harvest the same amount of rams. Initially, though, we're not sure what that's going to look like.
Braden?
Yeah, stay there, Justin. Okay. I got a question/comment, and kind of a split comment here, but for a long time I've been asking why we can't increase dates, you know, particularly on mountain goat. I've never understood why we quit killing mountain goats about the time they turn pretty. Mm-hmm. But with all these hunts, if we're willing to extend the dates by 7 days on each of them, why aren't we just extending dates? On once in a lifetime, the goal is to provide people an experience. If we can lengthen the seasons, is there any reason we wouldn't lengthen them on once in a lifetime?
Yeah, to answer that question, we already did. I mean, with mountain goats, there was a proposal from the Utah Bowman's Association, I think it was 2 years ago, is that right? I think it's 2 years ago, that talked about lengthening these dates. And so we did. We worked with our Forest Services and said, okay, what are the dates that you're shutting gates and closing gates and doing some of that stuff? And in some cases, it was hard fast. Others, it was, there's access. And then some of these, you have access points independent of those roads. And so that's why if you look at the...
Well, and I appreciate you already lengthened them, but now we're saying we can technically lengthen them another 7 days because that's the proposal. Well, why don't we just do it for all weapons? If we can do it, why aren't we doing it?
Yeah, mountain goats, it probably makes the least sense because I'm not sure we can do it.
Okay.
Like with this, we're talking about access points that wouldn't require access through the forest, because what we didn't want to do is extend these dates and have hunters say, well, I've got another 3 weeks, and then they get up there and they realize they have no access. And we didn't want to set these guys up to fail. So I get what you're saying, but this is one where we already gave as much as we're comfortable with.
So now I'm ready for my comment. I get what you're saying, and I disagree. If you draw a tag for Jack Creek sheep, the division is no way obligated to provide a helicopter to fly you in there. So if you draw a tag for a mountain goat in January, I don't understand why it's any of the division's business if you have motorized travel. But aside from that, the division's proposal is showing that we can extend the date 7 days. So let's do it for all weapons and let's let people hunt. My other comment is, I'm not sure I'm completely on board with this division from you, this proposal from Yuba, but I think this is something to explore. I really do support the idea of adding some sort of opportunity for hunters where it wouldn't take as many points to draw, and this may be going that direction. So I like the idea.
Additional comments? Okay, let us summarize. So from the public comments, we had the proposal from the Utah Bowman's Association, supported by Mule Deer Foundation, RMEF, Sportsmen for Fish and Wildlife. And you have that in front of you, so I don't think we need to go over that. SFW supports this proposal, and in addition to that, they would like to keep the muzzleloader deer hunt on the boulder instead of eliminating that. And then we also had a public comment about eliminating the ability to bait mule deer in Utah. And the rack comments, we had Rusty. He just had a question if these permits would be taken from the currently issued permits, and that is yes. And of course, Braden's recent comments on why not just lengthen the hunts. So with that, I'm ready to entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion.
Brian.
Wait, let me take a stab at it and see how we do. I'd like to make a motion that we accept the division's proposal with the exception of the SFW, Utah Bowman's Association, Mule Deer Foundation, and Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, once-in-a-lifetime archery permits.
Okay. Do I have a second?
Second, if I can squeeze it on me.
You can after your second.
So I just a quick comment I should have made earlier. I came here with the expectation to amend this proposal by the division to recommend a split rifle, split any weapon hunt on the Zion. I think the Zion is a good unit that we could experiment with, that we've got an any bull hunt going on. We're not going to interfere with a lot of things. The hunter crowding's a big issue. I have a lot of people talk to me about this idea, and I was going to fully propose it tonight. But after what Justin's told us, I'm willing to wait a year as long as we have some pretty good discussions and maybe have some kind of proposal next year. I'll sit on that, so I'll just make it as a comment tonight.
Okay. Any further discussion? We can amend.
I'd like to amend to Brian's motion, Chairman, with the not to exclude the Bulger Caparrots on the muzzleloader. So keep that the same.
Okay, do we have a second?
Second.
Okay, we have an amendment and a second. Any discussion on the amendment? Okay, let's vote on the amendment. All in favor? Is that unanimous? Okay, the amendment carries. Any further discussion on the main motion? All those in favor? We good? Okay, that carries. That was unanimous. Before we move to item number 7, we're going to take a short break. Be back at 7:10, 5 minutes.
This trip, my own accord, my own fault, cost me $120. I probably should have went to my state leadership group. Called my state president. And I said, I missed this meeting a lot because of your meeting. I said, oh, man. When I was trying to have a pet, I got a guy in my ward Saturday who just brought this Filipino woman to his picture. She's a member of the church, wants to marry her. Needed the meeting.
Why do we have a mail order bride thing in the church now?
I think it is. Seems to be working. You know, I'm President Raj. That's all right. I'll meet you. So I'm going to ask
you. If the 70-year-old guys are excited about the 50-year-old, well, think what the 40-year-old guys are going to be, how excited they're going to be about the 20-year-old.
Yeah. So on the way over here, I got through the yes. I got up to the escalator. Behind him again.
So you're never going to show up at this meeting again, is what I hear.
Well, I'm not going to talk to people about getting married. You know.
Like it started, if we could. We're on item number 7, which is the preference point system amendments. And Lindy will be presenting. Okay, we're ready. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. My name is Lindy Varney. I am the Wildlife Licensing Specialist out of the Salt Lake office. And tonight I'm here to present a preference point system amendment for our general season buck deer system. So in April, the Wildlife Board asked the division to review the way the preference point drawing for our general season buck deer is administered. And because of this, the main concern out there from our hunters is if you draw a deer permit on your second through fifth choice, you keep your preference points. I do want to point out that this is a social issue. This is not a resource issue. So no matter what options change, it's not going to affect the resource of the deer. I first want to start off to give you the definition of what a preference point is. A preference point works the best when there are sufficient number of permits to allow all applicants to be successful every few years. This creates certainty that you will draw your preferred permit every few years. A little bit of history on preference points. It began in the year 2000. You earned a point if you were unsuccessful for any hunt choice, and you lost your points if you were successful for any hunt choice. The process was changed in 2009 to you earned a point if you're unsuccessful for your first choice only, and you didn't lose your points if you drew your second through fifth choice. The reason for this change was to help reduce the number of remaining permits, remove potential of our computer systems, our computer sales system from crashing, and ensure that over-the-counter sales days had less of an impact on our public and on our system. So I want to explain to you how our general season preference point system is ran currently right now. There's four parts to it. Our first is our lifetime permits. So those are our lifetime license holders that get a deer permit every year. So we take those permits straight off the quota first. Next is our dedicated hunter applications. We evaluate their applications, and after those, we go to our youth applications. Just a side note that we do give 20% of our quota to our youth, and the applicants that are unsuccessful in the youth round, their applications actually go back into the fourth one, so the remaining applications. So once all three of those are evaluated, we look at all the remaining applications, so that's the adults and the youth that didn't draw out. So if you look at this graph, this shows our current structure of our draw. What we do is we look at the applicant that has the highest preference point, and we look at their hunt choices. So we look at their first, second, third, fourth, and fifth first before we evaluate the next point range. So, for example, if I have four points and the chairman has 3 points, my application will be evaluated first, all of my hunt choices, before we actually look at the chairman's application, because I have more points than he does. And also in the current draw structure is you get to keep your preference points if you draw your second through fifth choice. So this kind of shows you how it's played out the last 5 years on our applications. As you can see, in 2012, we had around 66,000 applicants draw their first choice, and about 26,000 applicants that were unsuccessful, and about 7,500, or 7% of our applicants, draw their second through fifth choice. This year, in 2016, we had around 68,000 of our applicants draw their first choice. Around 44,000 applicants actually were unsuccessful, and about 10,600, or 8%, of our applicants drew their second through fifth choice. So at the request of the Wildlife Board, the division is presenting an option to change the way the general season buck deer applications are evaluated. This process, if approved, will allow the division to evaluate everyone's first choice first, beginning with the applications with the greatest number of preference points. Then the division would evaluate everyone's second choice and so forth. Also, if you draw a general season buck deer tag, no matter what hunt choice, you lose your preference points. So with the request of the Wildlife Board to look at this option, the division actually ran a mock drawing with the current 2016 applications of applicants that applied in the general season deer. So if you look at this graph right here, this shows how the mock drawing structure was conducted. What we did is we started with the applicants with the greatest number of preference points first, looked at their first choice, and then once their first choice was evaluated, we went to the next point group range, so 3 points, and looked at just their first choice only. And we then worked down to the applicants that had 0 points. Once everyone's first choice was evaluated, we went back up to everyone's second choice, started with the applicants with the greatest number of preference points. And that's how we continue all through all hunt choices. So this kind of shows you the comparison. This represents residents of Utah only. This shows you, as you can see, the green represents our current drawing, and the black represents the mock drawing. So our first choice applicants in the current drawing, there was, like I said, about 3,000 applicants drew the first choice in the mock drawing. So there's about 3% more of our applicants that actually drew on their first choice compared to our current drawing system. And then if you look at the second choice, in the mock drawing, our applicants that drew their second choice went down about 2,700 applicants. And then the third through fifth stayed about the same, just barely different, barely of a difference. Unsuccessful stayed the same, and then ineligible stayed the same. What ineligible means are applicants that apply for either a limited entry, buck deer hunt, or dedicated hunter, and they were successful. So their application was withdrawn from the general season applications. So I wanted to see who that 3% were. I wasn't expecting that. And so I wanted to see out of the point range, who were that 3%. And looking here at this graph, this shows that it was mostly our applicants that had 0 points. So about 3,000 of them drew their first choice that only had 0 points. And there was a little bit more that drew, that had 1 point, and then everything else stayed about the same. The applicants that had 2 through 11 points. It was about the same. And also, I was always also curious about remaining permits. And if everything stayed the same, everyone applied the same, there was only a 6 permit difference of remaining permits. There were 6 more remaining in the mock drawing. But I also want to show you a scenario that could potentially happen if applicants lose their points, no matter what hunt choice they draw out. So if that is approved, this is a scenario that could potentially happen, is remaining permits could get up to 7,886. Now, that is the max of remaining permits that the division would have left over from the drawing. And that how I got that number is that's the number of applicants that drew out on their 2nd through 5th choice, and also the number of remaining permits that we had that weren't taken up in the drawing. So that is definitely the max that we would have to deal with in July. That's if no one applied through a 2nd through 5th choice. So like I said, it is a worst case scenario to that number. One thing that the division is asking, that if the general season buck deer preference point system is changed, we would like to request that we use the same approach for all of our other preference point systems. So that, of course, is our general season buck deer, our antlerless application, our crane, grouse, and swan. Thank you.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Would this affect the youth process? Did you go through a mock drawing with the youth, or does it affect it that much?
I didn't get those numbers, but it's probably about 3% of the youth more drew in the youth round, because everything else, like dedicated hunter, was about the 3%, non-residents was about 3%, and so like I said, I don't have those numbers with me.
But it's a similar type trend.
But it's a similar, trend that I could see happening, that the youth, definitely would draw out more in the youth round.
Okay. Braden?
This is the only thing that I really had comments on coming into this rack, and you already know the question, I can tell. But it's unanimous. Everybody wants something done about that loophole that I've talked to. I should clarify, just the people that have talked to me. But the other option they've talked about is, can't we still have it as part of the regular draw, but we take away the points, so everybody's in a random draw for their 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th. Did you look at that at all as an option, and what's the downside to that versus the plan presented? Do you understand what I'm asking?
No, I've been addressed with it by several people as well. That is definitely another option. This is the one that I'm bringing out tonight. Addresses both of the main issues from our hunters, is the loophole, and also people feel like if you get a deer tag, you should lose your points. Now, if you go to the random, it kind of devalues the whole preference point system. It's designed to give you that certainty that you're going to draw your deer permit either every year, depending on the unit, or some units are every other year. So it definitely does devalue it. Another thing is, there's that concern, is someone drew my first choice when it was their 3rd choice. I can see if you do it random, it's going to just say, change it to.
He's asking 2 through 5 be random.
Well, let me.
So your first choice, that wouldn't happen.
Yeah, let me finish.
Oh, sorry.
You're good.
She's on the right track. She's answering.
But so what's going to happen is I can see people saying, well, now it's random. I've been applying for, a couple years, and now someone's drawing my 2nd choice when it was their 3rd choice. Because my data shows that a lot of people apply for the same unit as their 1st and 2nd choice. About 90% of our hunters do. It's a different weapon type. And so they're saying, I want to hunt this unit, and I'm good with hunting with a rifle or muzzleloader or a bow. So I can just kind of see that they, instead of my first choice, it's going to swap to a second choice. So, but it's definitely a different option. That's, you know.
Good answer. Thank you.
So we could just rename it to be called alternate choices? And then nobody's feelings would get hurt. I'm just teasing. Sorry.
It's a different option.
Okay. Do you have other questions? Rusty.
Question. So how are the 7,000 tags over the counter on your mock? How are those? Explain how those are sold. Is that over the counter?
Yeah, so they just go over the counter.
First come,
first serve basis.
So we're getting into lines again, like we back in the old thing. Is that really where you want to go?
No, the division doesn't want to see that way, but our system has improved from when we had that issue, 10 years ago. Our applications are increasing by 7% each year, just for general season.
It's still sleeping bags out on your front lawn.
Maybe, but we have over 300 agents in the state of Utah now, compared to back then when we had those numbers of remaining. So there is definitely a lot more options, and we also have online. That's a great resource to those, to the hunters. But like I said, that's worst case scenario. I honestly don't see it getting that bad, but that's worst case.
This is how many youth don't draw? 20%, 50%?
So this is our current. I knew I had a slide for this. I was like, hold on. So this kind of shows you how many youth that apply and how many draw out. So if you look at 2016, successful. I don't have my glasses.
Can you enlarge it?
You got your bifocals on, Rusty.
I know, seriously, right? So, successful just in the youth round were 10,239. And then overall, we had 19,386 total applicants. And then just in the normal round, 3,100 drew. So about, a little over 13,000 out of 19,000 drew for youth. So a little over 13,000 youth drew, and there was a total of 19,000 that applied. 60%, yeah.
Two-thirds.
Yeah. Thanks, Kevin.
So I must have, did a mock draw, and you said if everything stayed the same, you have 7,800 tags left over.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's worst case scenario.
Same scenario, with the new scenario. And I'm just sitting here thinking, I'm looking at the crowd, and by the show of hands, how many of you guys out there is going to put in for a second choice if you draw second, third, or fourth, or fifth choice, you're going to lose your point? So a couple of you, but everybody else is shaking their heads no. So I think that you're going to see a lot of first points get drawn, a lot of people put in their first choice, and then people are just not going to fill out their second choice or alternate choice.
It's a possibility.
And so I'm just wondering if the point of this is to... Okay, that was my question, is that's how you did the mock draw? Then my second question is, how long did it take you to do the mock draw? Like, was it like you just put the numbers in the computer and spit them out?
No, we had our programmer, our contractor in Fallon, Nevada, actually run it, and it took about a month.
It took a month? I'm just wondering why we don't know about our bucks and bulls until May.
You want to know why?
I've been
I'm back there, Justin. I don't get your guys' permits numbers until May.
I just have to be prepared.
So if you give me permit numbers earlier, I could get you good results earlier.
I know.
There we are.
Okay, trying to move along. Any more questions? Okay.
Now, you start out with lifetime hunters. They probably all get their first choice, right?
They do, because, in the contract that we...
And then you go to the dedicated hunters. Do they all get their first choice?
No.
Okay.
No, it's just the exact same.
If a dedicated hunter doesn't get his first choice, does it go down to the youth and to the great unwashed where I am at before the dedicated hunter gets his second choice? Or
no, we run the exact same. So we run this whole structure between all the dedicated hunter applications.
Okay, so the dedicated hunter is going to get a tag, right?
If we have, because we have a set quota, we only can go up to 15% of quota for that unit. Once we hit that 15%, we can't issue any more quota. Does that make sense?
Well,
so if
it might make sense.
Yeah, we have a set, we have a cap of 15% for dedicated hunters. We can't go above that cap. And so once we've hit that, and if there's a dedicated hunter that still has that as their first choice, they would be unsuccessful because we've ran out of quota.
But it's by each group then that you run this through. And so the higher groups are going to get filled first, and then we're going to the great unwashed, and then we're going to run this program for them.
Yeah, definitely, I get what you're saying, but yeah, dedicated hunters applications are evaluated first before everyone else.
Thank you.
So.
I think we use all remaining applicants rather than the great unwashed, Gene, but...
Craig, my question's dealing with running this beyond 1 year, which you probably didn't do. Is it going to, on some of these units that are hard to draw, I mean, like there's units here in southern Utah where you wait 3 years, will that increase their opportunity where the, you know, where everybody, if they draw a deer tag, they lose their points?
I can see it changing it from, you know, making it easier, not going as long. If everyone loses their points, it's going to get people through the system faster instead of someone applying for that hard-to-reach unit that takes 3 or 4 years to draw for. They're going to lose their points and go back to the bottom.
Okay.
Okay, any more questions? Okay, any other questions from the audience? Lee, make sure you state, come the other mic, Lee. That to make it a little shorter, but state your name.
Thanks,
also.
Sorry. Lee Tracy, representing myself. I have several questions. Number one, while we were on the Mule Deer Committee, we've talked about some methods or some opportunities to combine the bonus point system with the preference point system with deer. Is this the answer to that, or are you still working on those kinds of things?
It's definitely something that we're still looking at. There's so many different webs that it created, and so we're still kind of looking at the options. But like I said, in April, the Wildlife Board wanted us to look at this method because, as you can see, you know, 2014, we took this out, and it, you know, was voted to stay status quo. And again, it brought up again. But yeah, we're still kind of looking at that option of merging the two. But it's definitely something that we're, you know,
bigger than this.
Yeah, it's a lot huger than this because it affects not only deer, but it's going to affect elk. It's going to affect pronghorn. So it's a lot bigger than what people think it might be.
Another question. You saw me raise my hand when he asked for a second option. That doesn't necessarily mean that I would go to a different unit. Maybe just a different weapon. So that if I wanted to hunt the Panguitch Lake unit, I'd have three different hunts there that I could apply for and still be in the same unit. Is there any way you're tracking those kinds of second or third or fourth choices? Weapon-wise as opposed to unit-wise?
Yeah, Lee, she stated earlier that 90% of the second choices are within the same unit for a different weapon type.
I look at that data every year.
No, I'm asking. I'm asking if that has been being tracked as opposed to, you know, the second choice being a different unit rather than a different weapon.
Right, that's what I just said. 90% of them are on the same unit. The people's second choice is 90% of the time are on the same unit, but for a different weapon type rather than going to a different unit.
Oh, okay. All right. A third question. There are an additional 20% youth archery tags as additional to the numbers that we see. Will that change or will that be the same?
That's staying the same. That's not being touched. Because it's 20% above the quota that's issued. So those are, we're not going to touch them. They'll still be available.
Thank you.
Okay. State your name.
I'm Jason Aiken, representing myself. I've got a question. Can you go to the slide? You were going through them pretty quick, but it looked like you had some slides that showed how many people put in for first through fifth choices, things like that.
What? Like this one? This is what I sent you?
Okay, so yeah, that one will work for now. And so 58% put in for more than one choice, right, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And then it looked like there was another slide that had had some other columns and data and stuff like that. I mean, you just went, like I said, you went through them pretty quick and I missed them. So is that just part of your mock drawing? Do you have any of that data that shows where those drawings took place for, okay, second choice, third choice, and fourth choice, and how many points those guys had? Does that make sense?
I got to take my tablet.
Oh, okay.
So this kind of shows how many applicants applied with how many points and how many drew their first choice and how many drew their second through fifth.
Okay.
So
okay.
This is like, I showed just a big graph of it and this is it broken down. And this is our current drawing versus our mock drawing. This is what I showed. I showed the board this.
Okay, so is this on the mock drawing or the way? Oh, okay, the current drawing and the mock drawing. Okay,
yeah.
I was thinking the green and the blue are different colors.
Nope, the green is the current, the blue is the mock.
For the different, okay.
Mm-hmm. And this definitely just shows, you know, how many points people had when they applied and how many were successful on their first and how many were successful on their second through fifth. And this just gives you the actual number instead of the graph.
Okay. No, that makes sense. So at the end, on the unsuccessful, is there just an unsuccessful?
No, there's that's.
Okay, so you got
around, what did I say, 44,000 were unsuccessful, and that didn't change.
Right. Now I've lost my train of thought of where I was going with my question. Okay. Thanks.
Okay. We do have some comment cards. Jason, did you want to comment? You're on the top of the list. Then followed by Lee.
I'm Jason Aiken again, representing myself. I'm kind of with Brian here. Let's use the draw system to distribute those tags as I guess, fairly and as efficiently as possible. Rusty had mentioned that, you know, we don't want to go back to selling tags over the counter, first come, first serve basis kind of thing. Well, we, you know, could possibly have to deal with crashing the system, things like that. And one way to eliminate that possibility, I'm not saying it's going to happen, it's one way to eliminate that possibility, is to, when they go to the second through fifth choice, remove that preference point part of it and just make it a random draw for the second choices. And then if there's any tags left over, then they move on to the third choice. And then if there's any tags left over, and that will allow, and then don't take that preference point away from somebody that draws their second through fifth. And kind of the reason that I think that you do it that way is if you've got people putting in for like the Thousand Lakes, it's going to take 5 or 6 years to draw, and they're putting in, and then they're putting in against somebody that's drawing like Pine Valley Rifle, where it's taken two years. They've got a lot better chance of drawing that second or third choice because of the fact that they're putting in for a unit that's harder to draw for their first choice. And so you're giving them that precedence over somebody else. I can appreciate that you give them the opportunity to put in, but when you're only talking about 8,000 tags compared to 80,000 tags, don't you want to kind of make it fair as just a random draw? Everybody has the same number of names in the hat, and then that way you can't say these guys are drawn more often because they're putting in for those harder to draw hunts for their first choice. The one thing that I really do like about it is looking at everybody's first choice. That is, to me, the most important part of the way that the preference point draw system works. Give everybody their first choice. That should be the ultimate goal. The second goal would be to distribute those tags as evenly as possible through the remaining draw, the second through fifth choice, so that you don't have the 8,000 tags left over to sell them on the first come, first serve basis. I mean, this year she said they only had 800 or 900 left over, so why would we want to go back to selling them on a first come, first serve basis when we already have a good avenue to distribute those tags? So thank you.
Thank you. So Lee Tracy followed by Mike Twitchell.
I think this is an answer to a question, a long-time question, and I think it's a great answer. My only disclaimer would be that we review this process maybe in a three-year period, because it's going to cost us hunters, you know, a lot of grief trying to outsmart the rest of the hunters and outsmart the system and try and figure out the best way to work this thing. So, you know, some of us will probably find loopholes in this one too. Thanks.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. My name's Mike Twitchell. I'm just representing myself tonight. I do want to thank the division. They do put a lot of hours, a lot of time, the mock draw. They show that they have a precedence for at least getting their data and understanding. I propose what they're doing with the exception of one item on this, and that's the loss of the point. I think that this is a perfect example of when we take something, we have a great idea, and down the road it needs to be tweaked just a little bit. But it may not need to be tweaked clear back to what it was almost initially. You know, a dozen years ago, we lost our point if we drew our second choice. And so let's do, not to go too redundant, but follow what Jason said, what Brian's recommended, and that is allow that point to accrue if you do not draw your first point. The second through the fifth can be a random drawing. I think that seems fair. 8,000 permits is not that many. I've seen a few hundred cow tags shut the system down. Has there been improvements? Yes, I think there probably has. But when you start talking 8,000, starting at a certain time, on a certain date, I really think that we'll run into issues. So I don't think that this is something that we need to make a major tweak to, but maybe just a very simple adjustment with the way that it's handled through their proposal sounds great. Let's just not lose that point. Thank you.
Okay. Our last comment card is from Bryce, Sportsman for Fish and Wildlife, and they support the preference point system amendments as presented. That's all the comment cards. We have comments from the rack. Brian.
I just think that we might be trying to fix this too much. I think we sent this up 2 years ago with basically draw your first, everybody's first choice first, and then choices 2 through 5, you can even draw them in order of 2 through 5, but just have them be points don't count, and you don't lose a point if you draw it. I just think that we might be over fixing it.
Okay. Thank you. Braden?
Let me be the devil's advocate here.
Do it.
Mostly because I don't like Brian.
I want that on the record.
It's in the notes.
You're a jerk.
Yeah.
Wait, let me get both of those.
Frankly, just be honest up front, I'm going to probably vote for whichever is proposed first, but I do want to clarify one thing that I see in this. Is this does have, as presented, it does have the potential to get rid of some of the points, and so a unit that now may take 3 points to draw could potentially only take 2 points to draw. And to me, that's a positive that we may be overlooking. I don't think it'll be hugely impactful, but if there's potential to get people move through the system faster and only miss 2 years of hunting instead of 3 years of hunting, that's a good consideration.
Okay. Wade?
I probably should ask this during the questions, Lindy, but what has our point creep looked like? I know we don't talk a lot about that, but how many preference points have been added in the last 5 years?
Off the top of the head, I don't know. I'd have to look at my notes, see if I can pull it up.
That slide that you pulled up for me, and it should show how many people.
The total number is 11, but that person drew out because they buy them over the years.
He's so much quicker.
So, yeah, there was an applicant that had 11 points. I know, crazy, right?
They thought they were bonus points.
But, you know, that person did lose their points this year from drawing out. You know, the unit that takes the hardest is, of course, is going to be your Thousand Lakes, and you have to have at least 5 points to draw out for that unit currently. So that kind of shows you, like I said, you know, how many people have what their points look like.
But it doesn't give you over the time. It's just showing.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't have the number of how many people, like, actually buy. Off the top of my head, I'd have to look it up and see if I can get it tonight.
I think I remember it.
Do you?
I'm remembering this off the top of my head, but this question came up during some of the mule deer stuff. And 5 years ago, we had about 100,000 applicants that were applying for general season deer. This last year, we were about 127,000 or something like that. So just in that time span, it's increased close to 30,000. And our general season permits really have fluctuated between 85,000 and 90, so if that helps you. So.
And people are accruing points.
Okay. Any comments? One more.
Okay, this is a real comment, not a question. So I think one thing Lindy brought up is that 7,800 potential leftover permits, we just accepted that as that's the number it's going to be. She mentioned about 6 times. That's worst case scenario. And she said, I don't see it being that many. Lindy kind of is the resident expert on this, and I would probably agree with her. Kind of think she knows what she's talking about. I don't know that aspect of it, leftover permits, I don't know that that's a big enough issue to really factor in.
Okay.
Brian. So what's the big, I mean, the the biggest complaint I heard about this point loophole was they weren't looking at everybody's first choice first. That's my biggest, everybody said that's the biggest complaint. I don't think anybody even cares. I mean, the big complaint I got is so-and-so put in for it on his third choice, and I put in for my first, and I didn't draw, and he draws on his third. If we take care of that, I think the social issue goes away. You know, I mean, that's what we're talking about. That's what we talked about 2 years ago when we sent it up, is let's just, if you draw everybody's first choice first, the loophole just got closed. Because the second, and then choices two through five, the points don't, they just don't apply. It's all random after that. I'm a gambler, so I'm all about even the odds. I mean, I just think that we can close the loophole, fix the problem, and not overfix the problem.
Okay.
Can I make a proposal? Or can I make a...
Well, let me just summarize first and see if there's any other comments. But I guess in summary, I think the way I see it, everybody's in favor of closing the loophole. And there's two options on the second. Either...
Division proposal or a random draw.
Yep, the division's proposal or a random draw for the choices two through five. So I think we're probably ready for a motion, possibly an amendment, and let's see where it goes.
I'll make a motion. I make a motion that we... I'll bet you... Why don't you just type it and then just read it back to me? It would be cleaner.
To accept the division proposal to consider everybody's first choice first and then have a random drawing for choices two through five that doesn't...
Bingo.
Okay. Do we have a second?
Is there a way we can get that on the recording?
I'm typing it.
He's living rent free in my head. It's a scary place, isn't it?
It's an empty place.
Okay. Okay. Do we have a second? Do we have a second to the motion? Okay. We have a second down here. From Harry. Any discussion on the motion? Wade.
I seriously have changed my mind on this issue about five times today. And about 90 seconds ago, I finally decided where we're going, or where I want to go. I've been accused of having an overdeveloped sense of fairness, and I just feel like... I just like the division's proposal the way it is. I feel like if we draw a deer permit, we lose our point. It's clean, it's simple, it's fair. One point or one permit, you lose your points.
Okay.
All right. I'll second Wade's proposal.
That's the way I feel. That's a discussion point. So we're going to have an opportunity to vote. Okay. So the motion as presented is to accept the DWR proposal to consider all first choices first, then have a random draw for everyone's second choices, second through fifth choices that doesn't consider points. So I interpret that as that you do not lose your points. Is that correct?
Yep.
If you choose. Okay.
They don't count and you don't lose them.
So if... All those in favor.
Hold on, Mr. Chairman. Okay. Sorry. I'd like to make an amendment to that motion.
Okay.
Let's hack off the last two-thirds of that. First part of the motion just says I accept the division's proposal as presented on bonus or preference points. That's what I'd like to amend the motion to say.
To accept the division proposal?
As presented?
Yeah.
It's just amending the motion.
Basically, you can vote. I would say you can vote against the motion, and we would entertain a new motion to accept the division's proposal as presented.
Well, so probably, but that's not a for sure.
Wade wants my bill. I feel popular in
okay.
I don't know where to go, but I
what do we do? Okay. Wade, I think the way to address that is we have an opportunity to vote on the motion as presented. If that's not the motion that you want to see, we'll have you can vote against it. If that fails, we'll have an opportunity to entertain a new motion. So all those in favor of the motion as presented with the second, show by the raise of hands. Five. All those opposed.
Six.
Was it six the first time?
It was six.
Six.
So.
Wait.
I don't know what just happened.
So, okay. There were six for. How many against? So six. So it fails 6-7.
How many people are here? Did we just have a dead person vote?
13 people here.
Okay. So the motion fails. There are no motions on the table now. We'll accept a new motion.
Can I make a new motion?
No, he made one. It's my turn.
I'll bet it's the same motion.
Craig? I'll make a motion that we accept the DWR's recommendations as they were presented.
As presented. Do we have a second?
I'll second it.
Wow. Okay, second from Brian.
It's going down.
Any discussion? Okay, all those in favor? All those opposed.
Pass 11-1. It's 11-2, right?
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Now we're going to move on to item number 8, and that's the Northeast Region Deer Management Plans. Randall Thacker.
Appreciate your time, brother, gentlemen. I'm Randall Thacker from the Northeastern region. I'm the assistant wildlife manager up there. We're here today to go even closer. We're here tonight to that's too close. To go through our unit management plans from the Northeastern region for our deer unit management plans that are up there. As most of you know, we have kind of a five-year rotation on our habitat monitoring crew, which is called the range trend. The range trend monitoring crew goes out each year and rotates between the regions and reads the long-term habitat monitoring sites that we have across the states. The year in that winter following them reading the sites, when we get that data back, we go through each of the deer unit management plans in for that region that was read, and then update those plans accordingly, either increase population objectives or decrease them if needed, or make any specific changes that are there. Now, having done this at a couple other RACs, I know most of you don't care too much about what goes on in the Northeastern region when it's not your region, and so I'm going to try to go through this really quickly tonight. If you have a specific unit as we go through that you're interested in, raise your hand, please, and I'll stop, and we'll give you more specifics if you'd like. Otherwise, I'm going to try to move through these rather quickly for you, because it's been a long night, I know already. So there's five units that we'll go over tonight. The first one is the 9-mile Range Creek unit. This unit, the first four of these, each one of these units has a separate sub-population objective for the two different sub-units that are in there to break them up for the different wintering areas and those kind of things. As you can see on this graph, the red dotted line corresponds the objective for the sub-unit that's represented by the red line here. This is the population estimate. This is the objective. On 11A, which would be the 9-mile anthro portion, that's the objective here of 2,500 deer with the population estimate down here. We are currently at 1,700. On the 11B, which would be the 9-mile portion of this unit, Range Creek portion of the unit, it would be the objective of 6,000 with 5,100 being our current estimate. As the range trend looked at the sites, habitat monitoring sites across this unit, they found that range conditions are either stable or they're increasing in trend. So now our habitat is doing well on this unit, actually seeing an increasing trend there. There's almost zero depredation issues on this unit, very
very, very limited. We are recommending, you can see here on this chart, we're recommending no changes to the population objective for the 9-mile unit. The next unit we'll talk about is the Book Cliffs. Probably a few of you are a little more familiar with this unit. Again, the Book Cliffs North, which is 10 AC, the population objective for that is 10,000 deer. The current population estimate is at 5,200 deer. The South Book Cliffs is represented here by the red lines, the red dotted being the objective of 5,000 deer, with the current estimate at about 2,500 deer. This unit, as we looked at the habitat monitoring data there, the Book Cliffs North, 10 AC, with the 10,000 objective, the range condition up there is stable and increasing. It's doing really well on the north. Now, there is some concern on a couple of the sites, two of the sites on the Book Cliffs South, which is the smaller population objective down there. There are a couple of those that we did have a decreasing trend on a couple of those sites, and those are primarily due to some invasion of cheatgrass and some of those kind of things taken over some sites rather than deer utilization, but it is a habitat change there that we're aware of, and we've identified in the plan to try to target future habitat projects for. So we are recommending no change on the population objectives for the Book Cliffs on either subunit. The South Slope, this is the South Slope of the Uintas. Both these subunits have the old objective was at 13,000 deer here. The red line represents the east portion, which is the Vernal Diamond Bonanza subunits over there. That population is actually exceeding the population objective right now, as you can see. The blue line here represents the South Slope Yellowstone, which is the western half of the South Slope of the Uintas, and is below objective, 9,700 deer compared to the 13,000. An objective. As we look at the range trend there, basically in stable condition, again, with the exception of two sites, two of our habitat monitoring sites that are in areas that were impacted. But in 1993, we had a large drought and it had a sagebrush die off in a couple of the areas in the winter range, some of our really low elevation winter range stuff. And those sites were taken over completely, basically, with the cheatgrass and annual weeds and things like that that are there. And so those sites are targeted for sure in the plan for some habitat rehab and similar sites in the area to be improved over there. Both the two sites that were in a negative trend going down, slightly declining, are on the east end. And the east end, though, what's interesting is you are familiar with the deer survival study that goes on across the state where we catch and radio collar the so many fawns and does each year. We re-catch those again later in the spring to see body condition, and we actually ultrasound each animal, taking some body fat measurements. What's interesting, even though it does show a little bit of a decreasing trend on those two sites, the rest of the sites were all stable or good, but we find those deer in that area are some of the healthiest in the state as far as body condition goes on, and have been the last couple of years. So we see no impact to the habitat from overutilization from deer. It's actually, but we are seeing some changes in our vegetation out there in a couple of the sites, but those deer seem to be doing quite well and are very healthy right now. On that subunit, we are recommending a slight increase on that from the 13,000 to go up to 15,000 on that subunit, and then leave the South Slope Yellowstone objective the same. On the Wasatch Mountains unit, this is the Wasatch Mountains West, is in the central region. Those habitat sites were red a couple of years ago. They updated the plan at that time, and we aren't addressing that at all. This is simply the portion in the northeast region. This is the Wasatch Mountains Current Creek subunit and the Wasatch Mountains Aviniquin subunit. The blue line and the blue dotted line show the objective of 15,000 deer on the Current Creek, and the red lines represent Aviniquin. You can see that the Aviniquin is at objective, at the current objective, and the Current Creek is exceeding it and doing quite well. Those wintering populations over there have had great winter for like last 5 years in a row there. The conditions have been just excellent and really improved and done quite well. We are recommending a change, of course, on those objectives there to take the Current Creek up to 20,000 from 15, and then increase the Aviniquin from 3,500 to 5,000. Our last unit is the north slope of the Uintas. There's one objective for the entire north slope of the Uintas for deer, and that population has done extremely well the last few years and has exceeded the population, the old objective that was set. We do find there that the range conditions are in good shape. They are stable or increasing all the way across the board. We had no exceptions on that. They are doing quite well. We do have some depredation concerns in certain areas, and those are addressed with regular depredation permits and different ways that are currently handling those just fine, and things seem to be working well. We do have the unique situation in the town of Manila on the north slope. If you can call Manila an urban area, because there's only a few hundred houses in all the whole area, but they have an urban deer problem. We do have 100 to 150 deer that are resident in that area. You've seen that in other similar places here in southern Utah, I know. When the city council in the plan states that when the city council and the mayor decide if they'd like assistance in removing some of those, the division will work with the city to address that issue. The problem is they've got half the town who loves them and half the town who hates them, and so they've got to work out what they want to do and to go forward with that. But the recommendation is here is to increase the objective to essentially what we have now, but just at 10,000 deer. And do we have any questions?
Any questions from the rack? Okay. Rusty?
That's good to see. Good news. What single thing do you think has caused all your population increases?
We've had five really nice winters in a row out in the basin last few years, and it really is. Our population gets driven by our hard winters. Our last one was 6 years ago, and that's when we see, and the radio callers have confirmed that, those hard winters, we drop significantly in survival on our fawns, and even adults take a pretty substantial hit when we have really bad winters out there. And it's a cyclic thing. You never know when it's coming. It will come someday. We'll have another one of those brutal winters that hit us out there. But the last five have been excellent. This one's looking good so far, so we'll wait and see. So.
Are you getting your fair share of habitat improvements over there?
We have on a number of the units. There is one or two units that are affected where the winter range areas are limited for access for us because the Ute tribal lands that are there, the South Slope, for example, some of the Anthro and some of the Aviniquin are hard to, there's certain portions of those units that are really difficult to get projects accomplished because it's Ute tribal land and they're sovereign land and they have, you know, they're different priorities sometimes than what we've got. And so, but have been able to do quite a bit on the Wasatch Mountains West has had over 7,000 acres. It's a fairly small unit, just the current creek there where you saw the one big increase. We've had over 7,000 acres of habitat improved out there. That's chainings and brush hogs and the various project types that have happened. We've also been able to, through different partners over the years and through mitigation for some of the Central Utah Project things, be able to actually have them pick up, and they've acquired additional acres over there, thousands of acres of winter range that have been picked up and protected in perpetuity on those units too, which is really a benefit to the deer for sure. So,
okay. Additional questions? Any questions from the audience?
Lee Tracy, with those increases in the population, can we anticipate an increase in tags?
As you know, buck-doe ratios is what determines that, and we have been increasing actually out there in our region. The Wasatch Mountains Current Creek, for example, increased 10% last year and 10% the year before because we were seeing an increasing buck-to-doe ratio. And so when we have the good survival rates, we've been seeing good buck-doe ratio increases, if the weather holds out for us and it continues to save deer, they'll be there, and we are seeing. We had the best hunt out there really in 40 or 50 years probably this year, and the quality of deer that came off on the general season hunts, it was neat to see.
All right, thanks.
Thank you. Any additional questions? We have one comment card from SFW, and they support the plan as presented. Do we have any comments from the rack? Make a motion. Okay, Braden.
I'll make a motion to accept as presented.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All those in favor? Motion carries unanimous. Okay, number 9, CWMU Management Plans and Permit Numbers for 2017. Scott McFarland.
How about Kobe Jones?
There, Kobe Jones. I was looking out for Scott.
I've been called worse, so that'll work. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Here to present the 2017 Buck Bowl recommendations for CWM News. Okay, so we'll break this down into new applications, renew applications, and change applications. And there are a couple reasons why we do change applications. One is change in voucher or permit allocation or private-public ratios, change in season dates, or change in acreage greater than 34%. So this year, we had 9 applications for new CWMUs, 1 dissolved, 2 CWMUs to form 1 new one, and that was Black Point, Missouri Flat, will now be Pavant Enzyme, and then we had 8 other new applications. 13 CWMUs submitted renewals for 2017 through 2019, and 9 submitted change applications requiring RAC and board approval. So we had a total of 31 applications to review this year. This is just a breakdown of what the CWMU program looks like right now. If everything gets approved, it's recommended, we'll end up with 132, the majority of those being in the northern region. And I think it's important to note that we're gaining access, some access for public sportsmen to 2.3 million private acres. That 97% of that 2.3 million is private, I guess. So just a quick overlook at permits. Right now, about 3,000 vouchers going to private landowners. But the important thing to note there, again, is that 503 public sportsmen get access to private lands that, without a trespass fee or anything else, they otherwise probably wouldn't. And just quickly looking at the antler list, those numbers are completely inverse, where 322 vouchers are going to the private landowners and about 1,243 are going to our public. So we'll break this down by region. In the northern region, new applications were submitted for Cedar Springs, Mecum Ridge, Royal Ivy Outfitters, and Snowville Flat for some new pronghorn deer and moose CWMUs, and we recommend approval on all of those. There were a lot of renewal applications that came out of the northern region, and just a few changes there. Grass Valley Clark Canyon, they always request a variance to hunt bull elk through November. And Hard Scrabble, Unit 5 there where we're over objective, they've agreed to progressively increase their antlerless harvest numbers over the next 3 years to try to help manage that herd. Also Mountaintop, again, same unit, they agreed to an increase in antlerless elk permits as well. TL Bar Ranch added pronghorn to their CWMU. And the change applications in the northern region, Deseret reduced their CWMU by a full CWMU plus some, so 13,000 acres, and then we just reduced the vouchers accordingly. There's some land that really didn't fit. It made a really complicated boundary, and it didn't add much value, and so they asked to remove it, and we agreed with that. Double Cone, they've got some public land inside their CWMU, so they added some more trade land to give access to public hunters outside of the CWMU. So they added about almost 3,000 acres of trade land, and we adjusted the vouchers accordingly. George Creek came with a request. They feel like they're handling their depredation okay, and they asked to reduce some of the antlerless deer vouchers there. Ingham Peak added bull moose, and Twin Peaks changed their name to North Peaks and increased elk vouchers and requested to decrease deer vouchers. Minimod, so moving on to the southeastern region, Minimod renewal, they request an increase of 10 deer vouchers there, and Red Ranch is no changes. Change applications in the southeastern region, Hiawatha added some acreage and requested one additional elk voucher, and we agreed with that. Indian Head changed their deer season to the later season, and Schofield Canyons requested 2 additional bull vouchers to put them in line with the sedum mews in the surrounding area. We could support that. This is the new one in the southern region, the Pavon Enzyme, which is really just a combination of Missouri Flat and Black Point, and that we're recommending that be a deer, elk, turkey, and pronghorn CWMU. In the central region, Allen Ranch went away for a year. It was a pronghorn CWMU, and they came back and reapplied for 2017. And Deer Creek went away in 2016 and reapplied in 2017 as well. You notice an asterisk over there by approve on Deer Creek. Frankly, this is an operator that we've really struggled with. And we struggled with the decision to make this recommendation to approve. This recommendation comes with an additional letter to the operator. We sent him some criteria that he'll have to meet on public hunter satisfaction. In the last 3 years of their previous COR, they had 6 public hunters, and they went 0-for-6 on harvest success. And that wasn't the only thing. The public hunter several times would show up at the gate. The operator wouldn't be there to let them in. There was more than one occasion where it's not an elk CWMU, and he allowed elk hunters that he received financial benefit from to go ahead of the public hunter and left them at the gate. And really didn't understand the program. He viewed it more as a private hunting club. We think we've got this straightened out now. We think this will be a benefit to the public. But if it's not, we won't continue with the COR. This is kind of the last straw with the letter and everything else. And we're recommending approval, but he's got to perform. And we'll be watching this very closely. Rock House is a new deer CWMU. In the central region, and then Bear Mountain on the Manti requested 3 additional deer vouchers to put them at 9 and 1, and we recommend approval to that change as well. In the northeastern region, Cottonwood Ridge, a new pronghorn CWMU that should help with depredation. Pretty excited about this one. Some of these pronghorn populations, the operator of this actually called me today and told me they were excited to be able to generate some revenue on these and help the landowners be excited to have pronghorn on them. So that's a good thing. And that's all.
Okay, thank you. Any questions from the rack? I have one question. Same question I had last year, Wade. See if you made any progress on this or if you remember it. There's a number of CWMUs. There's one in particular that we put in for every year for an elk, and it only has one public tag. And so the preference points don't ever kick in. Is there any thought or has there been any discussion on having a minimum of being 2 public tags so you can have 1 be preference and 1 be random?
You know, that's a good question. We really haven't ever toyed with the splits. The splits have been in place for a long time. I can understand how that would be beneficial to the public. It's a really good question. It's something we could entertain and look at with our partners there, but I haven't ever looked at that before, honestly.
I guess my other question would be, what do we need to do to move it forward, to entertain it? I discussed it last time. Wade's on the committee.
So
what can we do to move this idea forward?
So some of that would be with elk. A lot of these are in limited entry units. And so it would have to be a change in the split, because allocating more permits, it changes the percentage of public draw permits that go to private lands. And so that could be seen as unfair. So, it's tough. That one's not easy. Wade?
Mr. Chairman, can I throw out an idea? This is the only one I've heard that made sense to me. What if we just have 2 public permits every other year? It's the same amount of permits, same split, same ratios, but what you're talking about would come into effect. It'd just be every other year. It's about the only way I can even think to make it even feasible.
Without changing the split, that's the only thing that would work. Wade, you're right.
Well, I think that'd be worth considering and maybe taking to the racks or whatever that process is to see what the public comment is. I don't know how much interest there is out there, but, you know, there's advantage both ways. Somebody with just starting over again with 0 points has just as much chance of drawing that tag as somebody that's been putting in for the last 15 years. But yet, if you've been hoping to hunt on that particular CWMU and you keep putting in year after year after year, it'd be nice that a preference point kicked in. So I think there's pros and cons that I'd like to see move forward if we could.
Okay.
Any other comments, questions from the rack? I'm ready for a motion.
Make a motion that we pass the... That was pretty fast. Make a motion that we pass as presented.
Okay, we have a motion and a second from Rusty. Any discussion? All those in... Oh, Wade.
You know, I've got to stop you right before we vote. Just going to recuse myself from the vote.
Okay. We understand, because you're on that committee, right? Okay. All those in favor?
Did we give the public a chance?
There were no comments and no questions.
We just made an assumption that's accurate.
Okay. All those in favor? Okay. And we had one abstention. Wait. The goal is to be gone by 8:30 because the other racks got out in 3.5 hours. So we got 10 minutes.
We can do it.
Okay.
Do we want?
Put that up quick, guys.
Does anybody want to? The only thing that I can think of for Dave's comment here was it would be a
put it on the
a action. Motion to ask the board to put that on the what's it called?
The action
on the
log.
Action log.
That's probably what.
Is there anybody that wants to do that?
I'll make that motion.
Okay, we have a motion. We have a second. Motion from Rusty. You asked the board.
Let me spell it right. No, that was right.
To consider having 2 permits every other year. Oh my heck.
I like this movie, Kevin Wright.
I do too. I mean, he called me stupid, but I'm still okay with it.
I didn't say stupid. I just said there was a lot of echo in there.
Maybe next week you can we get this like game here,
Steve? I'm there. See, there I go again, trying to use my brain. It was after making an assumption. Once again, the man's 2 steps ahead of me.
So that bonus points and advantage.
Okay. All right, here's the motion. To ask the board to consider having 2 permits every other year for CWMUs that have only 1 public permit so that bonus points are an advantage.
Put that on the action log.
And we have a second. Is there any discussion? All those in favor? That carries. Unanimous. Thank you. Okay, the next item is Landowner Association permit number for 2017.
Okay. So in 2017, there are 12 landowner associations that are in the last year of their COR and already have approval. There's 1 new landowner association, 4 landowner associations requesting changes, and 1 correction. That make it for a total of 17 landowner associations, 126 buck deer vouchers, 78 bull elk vouchers, and 9 pronghorn vouchers. So Diamond Mountain is requesting an increase of 4 vouchers. That's because there was an increase of public permits on that unit, so they'll go from 44 to 48. Oak Creek is requesting an increase from 6 to 7 because they increased acreage inside the Landowner Association. Vivant Mountain is requesting an increase from 5 to 6, and that is because they increased acreage as well inside the Landowner Association. Pilot Mountain Elk, before they were receiving 1 voucher every 3 years, and now they qualify for 2 every 3 years because they increased, it says increased acreage, I'm sorry, that's incorrect. It's because we increased permits on that unit. And Book Cliffs Pronghorn should have been 3, the recommendation from last year. It was 2, and so that's a correction. And Henry Mountains is the wants to participate in the LOA program again, and they qualify for 1 deer voucher every 3 years, and that's what we're recommending. That's all.
Okay. Any questions? Questions from the public? We have one comment card from SFW, and they support the Landowner Association permit numbers as presented. Any comments from the RAC? Ready for a motion?
Chairman, I'll make a motion to accept the Landowner Association permit numbers as presented.
Okay, do we have a second? We have a second from Dale. Discussion?
Okay.
What?
Oh. Yeah. No, it's just me with the same thing. Just going to recuse myself. I'm involved in a few LOAs.
Okay. Thank you. Great. Okay. All those in favor? Okay. The last item that we have is the 2017 Southern Region RAC locations and start time schedule. Everybody has this in your packet. Should be on the last page. The one thing that I noted, and it's noted here, is that in September we was supposed to go to Richfield, but we ended up going to Beaver. And I personally liked that change. Other than that, I personally didn't have any issues with the other locations. Do we have any comments on the schedule or anything you'd like to change? Or Mike, how's the schedule work for you?
St. George is a long ways away from me.
Yeah.
We don't have a May meeting this year, so.
So that's not on the table this year?
It's fishing.
Is St. George gone?
It's fishing. We all know you're not coming.
Okay. So where would that be?
The December.
They didn't have it in. Oh, so we
didn't have a May meeting.
In 2016.
So 2017, there would be a May meeting in. Yeah.
Hurricane.
The bear meeting in December, is it something that usually runs long? I'm just wondering why we're starting it at 5.
I think that was so just to get people back for late night
is
driving
that, is
in
that
the
what
snow
we're
and stuff like that.
Okay, and that's fine. I just was wondering if it was a. It's just to get people home earlier.
So maybe split the difference and go 6 there might make sense.
No, well, I'm fine with it early. If that's the reason behind it, that makes. I'd rather see you guys travel in the daytime than. What's that? I'm fine with early. I'm good with it. That makes sense.
Okay.
Anything sacred about why we go to Richfield in December versus some of the months?
There's tradition.
Why are we going back? Okay.
Don't we struggle with the quorum on that December 12th meeting?
I, yeah. I'm not going to argue with that logic. There's been a few times.
Okay, would somebody like to make a motion? Okay, Dale. I'll make a motion that we approve the meeting for schedule for 2017 as presented.
So hold on, let me clarify what notation? As presented means. Does that mean that the September meeting stays in Beaver as it was this year or in Richfield as it was supposed to be?
As it is on here. Did you want it changed?
Well, in here it says it
we have to decide.
Right. It's both ways on there.
So you have to include that one.
So tell me if you want to be in Beaver or in Richfield for September.
Okay, we don't have a motion in a second yet, but
go with Beaver.
Okay, so the main motion is to have the September meeting in Beaver. Do we have a second?
So to as presented with the September meeting in Beaver.
Yeah. Okay, and we have a second. Any discussion?
Yeah, I'll just make one. I just ask a question. Do you think move it around? I mean, it's good for us that I have to travel, and we a lot of us, you know, some of us have to travel a long way. I'm fortunately in the middle, so it don't matter to me. But are we losing people because we are moving around? That maybe, you know, because they don't know where to go for sure.
I don't think so. We've done it for a long time, and the numbers, I mean, we had as much public here tonight as we do in Beaver, which is kind of, you know, Beaver seems to be the default if we're not going someplace else. And we have different people, but we have about the same number of people when we go to Richfield or when we come to Cedar has been my observation.
Okay. All those in favor? Okay. Motion carries. Is that unanimous?
Yes.
Okay. I have no other business. With that, we'll call the meeting adjourned. And we finished. Oh, shoot.
2 minutes over.
2 minutes over.